Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's conference call. Today is Monday, October 7th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389-pound. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please donate, support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on a scripture reading where we left off last week. We finished chapter 5 of Mark. So we're going to pick up from there. We finished chapter 4 of Mark, Mark 4. So we're moving into 5. So Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. And they came over onto the other side of the sea, onto the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him a man from the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, What have I to do with you, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him much that he would not send him away out of the country. Now there was there nigh unto the mountain a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us unto the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000 and were choked in the sea. And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had a legion, sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coasts. And when he was come unto the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed, and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verses 1 through 20.
Okay, before we get started, Gerard's got an announcement to make. Gerard, are you there?
Yeah, I'm going to mute myself here. Yeah, good to be back. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay, just want to make sure I had a little trouble getting in. I haven't been on since you've changed it, since we've been back to HD. Anyway, the announcement is that this past week we've had some meetings and we met with the Create Change people, and we've decided to partner with them. It's just kind of very exciting for us because it's going to give us an opportunity to grow and to probably realize our goals maybe even sooner than we thought. And there's a video that was produced, it's on our welcome page, and it was done by Create Change announcing this collaboration between NLA and the Create Change organization. And they have some very impressive people and some good ties into the president and different things like that that are, I'm sure, are going to help us, you know, moving forward. That's exactly where we want to be, and it's coming at a time that's, you know, timing is everything, and I think it's in God's time, and I don't want to get too excited, but I am kind of excited about it. So you should all go and click on that video. It's only a six-minute video, and it's something that actually they put together and sent to Trump, President Trump, announcing our collaboration. And you should be excited about it because I think you're going to see, you know, a new influx of new people. You know, they got a very good following, and that's gonna help in many, many ways. And we just remains to be seen. And I think that, you know, once things move, I think they'll move quick. It could be what we've been waiting for. You know, we've tried partnering with other people, but I think that this is the right direction. And time remains to be seen. But you know. Now's the time for everybody to get active, to get in on the ground floor here, you know, and I think once things start moving, they can move quick. So it's very exciting news. Go watch the video, and I'm sure that we'll be talking more about it in the future, but that's all I can say for now. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. I wasn't unmuted there, so, but I'm back. All right, this week here we're going to take a look at another paper we wrote. It just went in today, so we sent it via certified mail to the courts and served all the necessary individuals, you know, required to serve. If you want to see a copy of this, you can go to our website. And by the way, that video on our front page, don't click on it now. We have some important things to discuss. Wait a little later and click on it later. And again, it's only about 6 minutes long, as Gerard has said. But, you know, it's very important that we pay attention to these papers that are being read and being filed into the court and come to an understanding. It's an education in itself. Each one of these papers will give people an education on who we are as a people, what our powers and what our true authorities are, and how government really should be running, because it's not any way that it should be. We've been living in a fiction for a long time, and it's time to wake up out of this nightmare and take control of our own destiny, we the people. So anyway, if you want to follow along, it's called a writ mandamus. It's both an information and a writ mandamus. And it's filed, dated today, October 7th, 2019. So again, if anybody wants to follow along, click on that, and you can follow along as we read through it. One other thing before we get going, Q&A is open. We only have one person into the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, now is the time. Just hit the *6 to get into the queue. I believe it's a *6 and then a 1. Okay, let's see. All right, we're going to read this paper. It's a short paper. It's only 7 pages. It's not going to take much longer than maybe, goodness, maybe 12 to 15 minutes to read through. And if anybody has any questions or comments on this paper or any of the papers we've been reading, please, you know, get into the queue and ask whatever questions you want. Or if you got any comments concerning the things we're doing and the way we're approaching things. Okay, so let's take a look at this paper. This is an information and writ mandamus directed particularly to the United States Supreme Court and Federal Judiciary, being filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York. Also copied, President Trump and Attorney General William Barr. Sovereigns of the court are the authors of the law.
The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary are creatures of the law. The sovereignty of a state does not reside in the persons who fill the different departments of its government, but in the people from whom the government emanated, and they may change it at their discretion. Sovereignty, then, in this country abides with the constituency and not with the agents. And this remark is true both in reference to the federal and state government. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. We, the people of the United States, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. Thereby, we, the people, authorized judicial power in cases of law and equity. We did not authorize judicial power in civil law cases. Federal Rule Number 2 changes nothing. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Federal court judges, via judicial machinery, under the subversive Rule 2, committed fraud on the court and thereby concealed courts of law, also known as common law courts, under the guise of civil and criminal courts. Equity and law versus civil law. Article 1, Section 2. We the people ordained and established law and equity jurisdictions. We did not ordain and establish civil law jurisdictions. Courts of equity proceed according to the federal rules. Courts of law proceed according to the course of the common law and are governed by its rules and principles, also known as maxims, as contrasted with a court of equity. Courts of law are governed by nature's God. Equity courts are presided over by an appointed or an elected judge, whereas courts of law, also known as courts of record, are presided over by the people themselves, who are free and independent and untainted. Civil law, Roman law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence, that rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established particularly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the law of nature and from international law. Courts that proceed under civil law via Federal Rule 2, which is in conflict with 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072, proceed in jurisdictions unknown, and thereby all court participants forfeit immunity. Our right to judge is without permission. This is our history. This is our heritage. Civil rights are rights appertaining to a person in a virtue of his citizenship in a state or community, whereas unalienable rights are gifted by our Creator. And unlike people gifted by a state, we the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary ourselves, entrusted via natural law to dispense justice. We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people, vested Congress with statute-making powers. We, the people, defined and limited Congress's power of lawmaking. We, the people, ordained limited law-making powers via the Constitution. We, the people, did not vest the judiciary with law-making powers. We, the people, in all courts of law, are free and independent jurists, independent from the judiciary. In 1215 A.D., 25 freemen, which is the first recorded grand jury, assembled themselves in the name of the sureties of the peace and stood up to restore their natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back their island nation, England, that was subverted by a tyrant king. In 1776, 56 unalienable sovereigns assembled themselves in the name of we the people, and stood up to restore their natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back their 13 American colonies that were subverted by a tyrant king. Today, 7,840 grand jurists and growing assemble themselves from every state of this Union in the name of we the people to stand and restore our natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back these 50 United States of America that were subverted by the federal judiciary. In the United States Supreme Court case, United States v. Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administered indirectly by and on behalf of the American people. And its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, people have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of indictment to a court, which is then required to commence a criminal proceedings. Our founding fathers precedently thereby created a buffer that the people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, criminally violated the law. The grand jury is an institution separate from the courts over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The judiciary has no supervisory judicial authority over the grand jury. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. The grand jury has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. The whole theory of the grand jury's function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury is generally confined to the constructive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oaths of office. The grand jury's functions independent from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope and its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner in which the power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. The grand jury need not identify the offender, its suspects, or even the precise nature of the offender or the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from the court to initiate an investigation. The grand jury generally operates in its day-to-day functioning without the interference of a presiding judge. The grand jury swears in its own witnesses. The grand jury deliberates in total secrecy. The grand jury is free to pursue its investigations unhindered by external influences or supervision, so long as it does not tread upon the legitimate rights of any of the witnesses called before it. The Fifth Amendment constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. The grand jury prescribes their own procedures. The grand jury conducts their inquiries unfettered by technical rules. The Fifth Amendment common law assures the constitutional right to the judgment of an independent and informed grand jury. The grand jury's finding of an indictment is only in the nature of an inquiry or accusation, which is afterwards to be tried and determined. The only grand jury is a common law grand jury. The Fifth Amendment grand jury indictments cannot be quashed. No case has ever been cited, nor has the United States Supreme Court been able to find any furnishing an authority for looking into and revising the judgments of the grand jury upon the evidence for the purpose of determining whether or not the finding was founded upon sufficient proof or whether there was a deficiency in respect to any part of the complaint. It would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution to permit an indictment to be challenged on the grounds that it was incompetent or inadequate evidence before the grand jury. The people are sovereign and have an unalienable right to have government by consent through free and independent administrations of their own juries. The grand jury is a constitutional fixture in its own right. The judiciary, through Congress, bar written laws, and the judiciary bar written rules have subverted and tainted our juries and hidden our natural law courts of record. And through this extraordinary case, we are determined to restore the common law grand and petit juries. Federal judicial disdain for the people. A chief judge or justice, also known as a presiding judge or justice, is the lead judicial administrative office within any multi-judge court. The chief judge works alongside the clerk of the court in his or her respective court by overseeing the day-to-day operations of that court. The common law grand jury has been serving all federal judges in all 94 federal districts, whereas some rogue, arrogant chief judges have been returning our papers. Therefore, after October 21st, 2019, the olive branch extended to said chief judges will expire. And if these chief judges do not send us a certified copy of their oaths and provide a non-statutory form that provides for the people access to natural law courts without cost, as per the supreme law of the land, we shall be forced to pursue indictments against them for conspiracy, treason, and concealment. Furthermore, we the people await the United States Supreme Court to honor their oath to support and defend the Constitution for the United States of America by putting your judicial house in order. Once we reach critical mass, the olive branch will expire, and we will pursue indictments for conspiracy to commit treason and concealment against the justices of the United States Supreme Court. Ordered, the United States Supreme Court is to honor their oath of office. Let our people go from your jurisdictions unknown, and reinstate our natural law courts of justice that you have concealed since 1938. All federal district court judges are to send the common law grand jury a certified copy of their oaths. All federal district court chief judges are to provide a non-statutory form that provides for the people access to natural law courts without cost, as per the supreme law of the land. Sealed and dated October 7, 2019, signed, Grand Jury Foreman. Okay, before we move forward with any other things, and Jan, do we have any announcements or any questions or anything?
We have one announcement, and we have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
As you know, John just finished another writ today, and we need to get it out. I've got about two-thirds of them already sent out. I could use a few more volunteers for the mailing, and we'd be all set. It would be nice if people could send out like maybe 20 or 30 each week. It doesn't amount to much money, but it makes it a lot easier on my end because I don't have to keep breaking up the master list each week into smaller pieces and working them around. Then in terms of questions, are you ready for questions, John?
I'm ready.
Okay. Some of these are somewhat more of a statement than a question, but they get to the question eventually. This person is supposed to appear in family court on October 2nd at 1:30 for court action related to contempt. Doesn't know why. He was arrested unlawfully on August 26th, and he's afraid he'll be arrested again. An amicus curiae and show cause denial of jurisdiction by the grand jury was filed with the clerk of the court, the judge, the district attorney, and his bankruptcy attorney this week. Now, his question is, first, what if the judge denies or rejects the show cause denial of jurisdiction due to the grand jury not being party to this case?
Okay, well, you know, look, at if you are called to court, you need to go. Obviously, these people are out of control, and they will arrest you and put you in jail, even in traffic court. But in any event, if we filed a paper on your behalf, and when you get into the court, you might want to have a copy of that paper, a couple of copies of that paper, just in case the judge says, yeah, I've seen it, and you might say, well, would you like an additional copy? And you might want to read a couple of lines out of that, the fact ultimately that you are challenging the jurisdiction of that court. And jurisdiction, once it's challenged, it must be decided. And that's the key word, challenged and decided. You're challenging, it must be decided. And a lot of these judges, they'll try to just turn around and say, yeah, I already decided we got jurisdiction, let's move on. Well, again, depending on how brave you are in that court, you can return back to the judge that, this just proves the fact that you are biased because the case has not been heard. It has to be decided. To be decided means it has to be heard. That means the other side's got to write a paper. And they didn't write a paper.
And here you are, you have my paper. And these papers are supported by facts and sources. We've got plenty of sources and facts where this information comes from, what the true law is. And therefore, if that's the only paper you have to decide on, being a judge, you can't put your own personal opinion in here. You have to judge on what's before the court. And the fact that you didn't judge what's before the court, which you should have agreed that you don't have jurisdiction and shut these things down, but instead decided without hearing the other side and without even considering what's been said that, you know, you're going to continue on. So you could just object to that and then let the case move on. They're still not going to throw it out, but maybe you might shake them up a little bit to maybe recall for another hearing at another time. You know, that judge clearly has to recuse themselves if they've denied you jurisdiction, deny your challenge of jurisdiction. And if they don't, you know, you should suggest that they have to recuse themselves. And also, it should not be heard in that court, because that court obviously, by what the judge had already said, believes that they got jurisdiction, and therefore they're biased. They need another court of record, which they're not a court of record anyway, and there is no court of record above them, but, you know, we need to call for a court of record to hear it. After 30-some-odd days, I think it's 30 days, so we'll give them another 5 days, so it's about 35 days after we send it out into the mail to file into the courts and serve on to the individuals, then we will go through the process of moving the case for cause. And so that case would then be moved into the federal district court here under a joinder. And the key part of this whole case is the fact that you are being taken into jurisdictions unknown and that you're being denied your unalienable right of due process. And that's why you could join it to our case, because it's exactly what we are fighting in the courts against the United States Supreme Court, all 94 federal jurisdictional districts, and both houses of Congress and the Senate. After 60 days, probably we're going to give them 60 days to respond. We may decide not to give them that much time, but, you know, 30 days is what we really only have to give them. In the federal courts, they like, hey, when you come after us, you go after a federal agent or someone that works for the government, we want 60 days. I don't know what makes them so much more special, but we might give them that 60 days. So right now we're thinking of doing that. But again, depending on where we're at and what's going on at the time that they start to expire, we may give them that extra 30 days. In any event, after that 30 to 60 day period, which they probably will not respond, but if they did respond, they're not going to be able to prove jurisdiction because they simply don't have it. And that's by their own words, as a matter of fact, the fact that they are operating under civil law. That's jurisdiction's unknown. Have no clue where that's at. Nobody does. But in any event, after our 30 to 60 days expires, we then will serve papers on them with a decision and an order. We will then start pursuing anybody who does not obey the order. We're going to start pursuing indictments for those individuals, particularly the judge, because that's the one that has to shut the case down, cease and desist. So that's the process we set up. So again, let me just give a real quick rundown of the process. First, anybody who wants to file their case, join to our case, you only have to go up online, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and click on abuse of courts. And when you click on abuse of courts, read that page very, very carefully. Make sure you do all of the things. There are five steps to get to the point. The fifth step is logging in to fill the form for joinder out. Once you click that form, then you get access to a form, and you just fill everything out. Wherever there's an asterisk, you have to put in the information. Once we receive that, when you push send, Jim will get it. And once he receives it, he will then prepare a joinder request for you. He will email that to you. You'll sign it. I don't believe that one gets notarized. You sign it, and then you send it in to the address. We ask for a donation of $100 or more, but in these cases where people are trying to do something in their court, in the courts, you know, if they can't afford $100, you know, whatever you can afford is a donation. These are purely donations. We don't charge anybody for anything. Obviously, we need money to operate, so either we get donations to operate or we don't operate at all. So it's that simple. The donations go to National Liberty Alliance. The grand jury sees no money, touches no money. And National Liberty Alliance provides all the necessary, you know, overhead for the grand jury, the papers, the printers, the ink, the stamps, the envelopes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, once that paper is then received and the process starts, Jim will work to prepare a paper that will again be emailed out, and that will be the amicus curiae. After the amicus curiae is served, we wait 30 to 60 days. Again, we're undecisive at this point. Definitely got to wait 30, but we might give them 60. No, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, that is true. Yeah, because the next step is to moving into the court for cause. Let me backtrack here. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's 30 days. We're giving them 35 days to answer the amicus curiae. Then we do a move for cause. And we're probably going to do 30 days, but we possibly could give them 60 days for answering that move for cause. I don't think we're going to give them the 60 days, and I'm thinking about it. We're probably just going to give them 30 days plus maybe 5 days grace, you know, and for papers to transfer into the in the mail. If we run longer than the 35 days, it's only because we're really bogged down and we just, you know, got a little bit of a bubble that we have to catch up on, and then a bottleneck, and then we'll get the papers done and in. At that point, again, a decision is made and filed with the courts, and we take it from there. Now, we're not promising anyone, you know, sunshine and lollipops or anything here. It's an uphill battle. It's going to be an uphill battle for a while yet. But the times, they are changing. Things are happening. I see a lot of things going on. Look, at over the past year, I've seen things that I've never accepted. I might even take that back further. I mean, when Trump was elected, I never thought I would see something like this. But a lot of things are happening. New things are coming up. I do believe that we are going to hit critical mass, I do believe, before the end of this year. We're in October now. We just moved into October. We've got November and December. I have a real strong feeling that by December we're going to hit critical mass. I'd be very surprised if we don't. But things are moving along. And there's going to be a lot of exciting things coming down the line over the next few months. But again, now is the time for educating yourself. Now is the time to prepare yourself, especially if you're going to become an administrator for the juries. Four people in every county we're looking for to take that job on. It is a paid position. It's a professional position. It does require an education. No experience is necessary. We are educating. It starts right here at National Liberty Alliance. It starts with taking our course, government by consent course. Then it starts, of course, also with the other courses we'll be putting up and reading the papers. You know, again, especially after taking the course and reading the papers, you'll have even a better appreciation for the papers that are being written. But I'll tell you, even anybody that doesn't really have much of a background in American history and in common law and in the court system and the process and the way things work, even if you have no background in that, I do believe that the papers that we have been filing, you read through them again, it's an education and you will understand it. It's as Jefferson said, plain language by plain people. And that's exactly what it is. And most of what we have to say is really quoting our founding fathers and that which has been established by law through history for thousands of years. You know, it's just undeniable truths. Common law is built upon maxims. Maxims are undeniable truths. The self-evident truth, as John Thomas Jefferson put it in the Declaration of Independence. Every sentence of the Declaration of Independence, you could read every sentence independently and look at every sentence, and every sentence is self-evident truth. Okay? Same thing with our Constitution. You cannot deny it. It is self-evident truth. Of course, there are certain parts of our Constitution which are just process, and you could do this way or you could do that way, and you can have so many days to do this and so much time to do that. And, you know, all those things are, you know, it could be just decided. But generally speaking, the powers and the authorities that we gave to our servant government, for instance, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, where we gave them 18 powers. One of the 18th power was the power to write law, and that's called positive law, which we understand as United States Code or titles, titles 1 through 57. And so we gave them that authority, and if you read through them, they're all self-evident that this is the power and the authority that a government should have, and when you see what's missing, it's because this is what the power of the government shouldn't have. If it's missing, they don't have that power. We also make some declaratory, statements in Article 1, Section 9, which is really almost like part of the Bill of Rights. It talks about certain rights that they cannot violate. It talks about a lot of different things. One of the most powerful, of course, is the power and the authority of the people to have their right of due process through habeas corpus. And any judge who denies a habeas corpus deserves not to be a judge at all. They are no judge. Any judge who denies a habeas corpus to anybody is no judge at all. They're a tyrant, and they need to be removed from office, and we will do that. I don't think we've done a habeas corpus in a while. I think we do have one coming down the pike. We're not going to shy away from that. But I do believe the best place to start off is with a challenge of jurisdiction. Unless someone is actually in jail, okay, then a habeas corpus is in line for that kind of a situation. And if anybody wants us to work with them on that, we will do that. You know, the purpose of the grand jury is more than what we've been told, far more than what we have been told. The paper we read today and a lot of the information we got came from the decision in a court case, United States versus Williams. It's a 1992 court case. They must love that one, I'll tell you that, because they try to tell you anything before a certain year, those court cases are irrelevant, like Marbury versus Madison, one of the most important cases of our time. Marbury versus Madison, and it was one of the first, and it is a powerful case. But that's irrelevant to them now. That doesn't count anymore. We don't need to look at that. At least that's what they tell us. We have been living in their fiction way, way too long. It's time to come out of their fiction, wake up to reality, wake up from your nightmare, because that's what we have been living for quite some time. They have robbed us of our heritage. They have stolen our unalienable rights. They have denied us due process. And they put us in jail at will. It's no different than any king out of control and casting us into their prisons because we disagree with them. It's time to step up. Anyway, things are about to happen. I think things are going to take a really strong move in the very near future. I pray that that's the case. I do believe, from all that I can see, it looks really pretty likely. So with that. Okay, what else we got there?
Next question. If the judge denies or rejects the show cause, how long must he wait before the case can be moved to federal court? And if he's unlawfully arrested, how long will it take to get me out on a habeas corpus?
Well, again, we would do a habeas corpus right away. There's no reason for you to be arrested. You want to do everything very, very calmly in a courtroom. You don't want to be disrespectful. You want to, if the judge tells you to shut up, you know. I had an argument with a court, with a judge one time, and he was denying, my rights. And I brought up cases for the United States Supreme Court declaring certain things. And he would argue with me, and I said, well, then I guess you're just denying the United States Supreme Court. You know, you're just overruling them. And he argued back, no, I'm not doing that. Well, then why don't we put it into effect? I saw at some point that it was time to shut up because he was ready to, give me a place to live for a few days. And so you want to be careful, really, really careful in a courtroom. If you're too nervous to make the argument, then that's fine. Don't worry too much about that, because we're going to move the paperwork. It's going to move through, and they're going to have to deal with it at some point in time. They're going to ignore it, and we're just going to move forward, and we're going to continue to indict, and we're going to continue to move. We make justice. We may get a judge that realizes that it's time to come back home, so to speak, and start to do the right thing, acknowledge your paper and dismiss the case and do the right thing. That's a good possibility. I think more as time goes on, that possibility is going to become greater and greater. But as a general rule, as far as most judges, I think most of them are going to deny it. They're going to debate it. They're not even going to want to argue it. They're just going to deny it. And we're just going to move on. And we're going to indict. We're going to do everything. And they will pay the toll at some point in time. And I don't think that time's too far away. So things are going to take time. The possibility of action right away is possible. Rare, but possible. We've had some successes in places. We didn't expect to have them. Most of the time, we don't get them. We're not interested too much in winning, all of the battles. I mean, we'd love to win the battles, but that's not how you win the war. You have to win the war, and it's in the final results, the final days. That's what's really going to count. You can lose most of the battles and still win the war. Again, go study history. Washington lost battle after battle after battle. I mean, what he went through and what he had to do in order to survive is just unbelievable. And people who don't know about this history, it's a real shame that our schools don't teach us these things. But the details of some of these battles and what took place and how much Washington lost here and lost there, but he won the war. And that's the key, okay? And I know that sounds pretty bad for someone that's stuck in court trying to get out, and, we lose a little battle here and a little battle there. But at the end of the day, you're going to win the war. The President Trump has hit the point of no return. He can't backpedal. He can't turn back, and I don't think he has any intentions, of course. I mean, that's clear as far as I can see. It's clear as a bell. He has no intentions of backstepping. But we, the people, are not interested in some of our rights. We want all of our rights. We're not interested in a part of a right. We want the whole right. Rights are unalienable. They cannot deny us. They have been, but they cannot do that lawfully, and we need to step it up. We don't want part of the law or half of the law. We want the law. It's either all or none. There is no such thing as half a law. You can't do something half right. You either do it right or you do it wrong. If it's half right, it's half wrong, so you're wrong. It's got to be done right. So we're looking for free courts. We're looking for untainted juries. We're looking to take control of our political process and our judicial process. And anything that gets in our way for that, we have to keep plowing along, and we need to get it. So anybody who tries to tell me that, Trump is not going to, he's going to stop halfway, you can't get people who are guilty of crimes and decide, well, we're going to let that one go. You know what? If that happens, we the people will take charge of that, won't we? We will file indictments on our own. We're not going to let them get away with it. We can't let them get away with it. It's all or nothing. It's the law or our unalienable rights, or it's nothing. And we will just have to continue to fight until we get our rights, our unalienable rights, and our laws obeyed. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for them, and they are not obeying it. But it's up to us to force them and require that they obey them. That's your job. Educate yourself. Get prepared. The time, I think, is coming near. Okay, anything else? Jan, you may be muted.
Yes, after an 8-year custody battle, the circuit court inserted a best interest attorney. Together with the attorney of the other party, a female patient, the BIA, and the judge, two teenage daughters were prevented from communication, but they wanted to see me, and it happened on multiple occasions. Several days ago, the same judge issued a contempt order. As I understand it, it can be attacked collaterally in the U.S. District Court on jurisdictional issues and 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242. But meanwhile, is there any other remedy to vacate this judgment in the same circuit court?
Okay, is this the same person who was talking
yep.
earlier?
No, this is a different person.
Oh. Right. Well, again, filing with us might be something. Of course, you can continue to do everything else you want to do, but filing with us, you know, and joining the cases and, you know, is something that could be done and hopefully will work sooner than later. You could make the move on your own into federal court. We do provide forms and different things, and I'm sure, you know, if you've got experience, you've got other forms and different ways you've looked at different things. But even our forms are very common law. And if you do not have experience in the court and you don't know what to do after you file that paper or what to say after you file that paper and you're in the courtroom, then don't do it. I hate to say it, get a lawyer, but, you know, it brings you deeper down into the pit. But then on the other end, when you try to do things pro se and argue with the judge, he's only going to beat you down more and more. You would probably get a lot better off with a lawyer than you would without a lawyer. But who can afford a lawyer for these things? And again, you're in jurisdictions unknown. We have no idea. The key thing is getting out of there. And so you have to do something to challenge the jurisdiction. You could try to do it on your own, but again, it could be very dangerous. What do you do after that, you know? We teach people what to do after that. And again, this is why we tell people to take our course. Getting our course will help to prepare you. But nothing is more important than experience in the courts, trying different things and seeing how they respond and what happens, what works, what doesn't work. But really, if you got a judge that's a little smart and understands what's really going on, you can kind of take control of that judge. If he understands that Rule 2 is treason and that they're operating under Rule 2 in civil law and that they have abrogated common law, and by the way, they didn't abrogate common law. They abrogated also equity. Equity doesn't exist no more. They have civil law. That's what they call it, civil law. And it's either criminal or civil. And so equity, they acquiesced equity. Equity is positive law. That's lawful law by authority. And that authority comes from the Constitution that gives them the authority. The Constitution comes from the people who have the unalienable right of writing a constitution and governing themselves, and that right to governing ourselves and to write a constitution and to have government by consent comes from God. So any kind of a trail that leads up that road to God is a lawful equity process, or what's called positive law. If people are living under a state constitution written by the state, okay, you know, Russia's a republic, China's a republic. The state wrote the Constitution. Now, when that Constitution gave the authority to whatever legislative bodies they have to write law, that's not lawful. That's not equity. That's not positive law. Positive law must come from a proper authority, and that proper authority must lead up to our maker. Any place else, it leads to a man. And it is no law at all. And it's important for people to understand that concept, because herein lies our liberty. Understanding this is the core of our liberty. And if we're not free in our courts, we're not free anywhere. And believe me, we are not free in our courts. We must seize and take control back of our courts. We are determined. If necessary, good and bad, if necessary, we are determined to even indict the United States Supreme Court justices, if that's what it takes. If they refuse to acknowledge the law, if they refuse to bend their knee to the law, and they refuse
to clean up their own house. They're responsible. They're liable. We gave them that responsibility in Article 3 of the Constitution. We gave the Congress the power and the authority to create other tribunals, okay, for those courts, which would, and we created 94 federal district courts, and we put them underneath the wing and the control and the authority of the United States Supreme Court. They are their boss. And it's time that they start acting like the boss. The whole process is out of whack. We have tyrants running the whole process. People's unalienable rights of due process, gone, out the door. And the United States Supreme Court knows it. They know it. Why don't they do something about it? I'll tell you why they don't do something about it. Half of them are with us, to some degree anyway, but we got to remember where they got their law degree from also. But half of them are pretty much with us. They want a lawful, they want to do the right thing, but they're between a rock and a hard place. They kind of got a gun to their head, okay? Well, I don't think that that's the case anymore. Yeah, it's kind of, the threat is still there, but the reality is no longer there, in my opinion, okay? The deep state is being rooted out. The swamp is being drained. There's still a lot of work to be done. There's still a lot of evil out there, a lot of strongholds that we still have to take control of. I'm beginning to see more than I realized before. But nevertheless, they're going to go down, and it's just a matter of time. And it's time now for them to step up and stand with the people. And if they don't have the guts to do that now, when we're giving them the power and the authority and the ability and the coverage, and, you know, turn to us for protection. Turn to the people. Turn to the president for protection. If they're not willing to do that, especially now, then they're not qualified to be justices in the United States Supreme Court. And remember another thing. United States Supreme Courts have nothing to say about courts of record. The decision of a court of record is final. The people speak. It's done. It cannot be appealed. It's over. Period. End of subject. They cannot overturn it. There is no appeal from that. The only thing the United States Supreme Court could do concerning a court of law is to defend and protect the unalienable rights of someone's rights who's being abused in one of those courts. That's the only thing that they can interfere and intervene on. But anything else, they can't do it. When the United States Supreme Court heard the case of Roe versus Wade, they stepped on the toes of God. They decided to go into God's domain to take his law, because that doesn't belong in equity courts. The United States Supreme Court is an equity court. It gets to judge under titles 1 through 57. It gets to the authority and the jurisdiction as we have given them in Article 3 of the Constitution, in both law and equity. But law only when someone's unalienable rights had been affected in that court case and it needs to be protected. And they have the right to come in and protect that person and make sure that they get their unalienable rights and remove them from jeopardy. That's their duty, as a matter of fact, and we expect that. We should expect that. But anything more than that, they don't have. So when they stepped on God's toes, thinking that they had the power and the authority to change the law, and the Bible speaks of that in the end times, that these people would think that they have the power and the authority to change the law. And I'm sure that's both spiritual and literal. And in the literal side would be in God's court. Where is God's court? God's court is right here in the United States of America. It's in our judicial process, and it has been robbed by Satan himself through these people. And it's time to take it back. That's his court. And when they went and violated him and his law, trust me, the wrath of God will not rest forever. You know, at some point in time, and I could see it coming. And he's going to use the people to take them down because he always operates through the people. He even says that greater things you will do in my name than what he had done when he was here, walking as a man some 2,000 years ago. But anyway, greater things we will do, okay? What we are doing is bringing back and reinstating the king in the court, in his court, which is his court. And he's allowed him to take it and rob it from him. Now he's coming back, and there's going to be a vengeance. That's why I see justice coming, and it's coming soon. It's only a matter of time. Okay, what else? Anything else?
Yes, sir. So we're not even halfway through, John. Since counties no longer have individual bonds for public officials and instead have a blanket policy, does the company or corporation providing the coverage have to adhere to the Uniform Bonding Code?
Well, of course they would. They have to obey their own laws. But look at, I don't know where they think they have the power, the authority to do what they do and have these people in places of power without their bonds when it's required to have a bond. There are certain reasons why that's happening. They're not affordable anymore. But nevertheless, the law must be applied. I think, that's something that's going to be corrected. But it's going to take time. A lot of things need correcting. But first, until we get the house in order, we can't correct anything. And like I said, if the United States Supreme Court doesn't put their house in order and obey the law and allow the people to have their place in government where they belong, to consent to them through the juries, untainted juries, both Pettit and Grand, and through the political process through the committee men, where they have the power and the authority to decide who really goes onto that ballot. If they're not willing to step over and do the right thing, then we're going to have to do it for them. We're going to have to take it away from them. But this is what they should be doing, is bringing back the power and the authority to people. Just like Trump says, he was not elected to take power, but to give it back to the American people where it belongs. And that's what he's working to do. And Congress needs to do the same. And the United States Supreme Court needs to do the same. And we're not done with Congress. We've given Congress some writ mandamuses and orders. But we are going to be indicting there and get a little more hardcore with them, too, sooner or later. But our most important battle at this point is the federal court, because that's the key. You know, as the Senate was the key to maintaining the power of and protecting Trump, so is the United States Supreme Court the power to the people to have authority back over them and to take 100% control of our courts of record, where nobody in that decision process can work for the government. In other words, the magistrate, he or she may sign the paper, put that seal on it, but he or she must do the will and perform the will of the people without adding anything onto it and without taking anything away. And that's what a magistrate has, no judicial powers at all. And by the way, they gave magistrates judicial powers underneath the judge, but they gave them judicial powers in their rule through the Rules Enabling Act back in 1934, and processed and written and applied in 1938. That's when it took effect. And from that point forward, they say wherever you see the word magistrate, they really mean magistrate judges. And that's why you get magistrates that are in courts making judgments. We didn't give them that power. We didn't give them that authority. That's not part of their role. They're magistrates. They're administrators. They're to maintain the will and the authority of whatever the authority of that court is. And in the case of law, it's the people, the 12 jurists. All right. What else you got?
We've heard Trump is doing something regarding special education, but action isn't quick enough. Local schools, as well as state boards, do not have enough accountability. Other school options aren't options for some. Is it possible for anyone with knowledge to offer insight for those of us dealing with school denying students rights to special education and related services, as well as punishing kids for lack of skill? Department of Ed complaints, school board, and civil rights office are no help. My son is a junior this year, and I battled school 6 years and counting. I feel defeated. Anyone know where I can find resources, books, sample letters, anything to help? I'm currently reviewing rightslaw.com. School is being unreasonable. Legal aid will not help. Schools will have attorneys during due process administrative hearings. This is an unfair advantage.
Well, yeah, I know exactly where I can send you for assistance and help and participate in bringing things back into law and order. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Obviously, you're here already. But that's what one of the things we do. Look, it, President Trump cannot fix this problem. He can initiate certain things and try to push forward towards that, but they will erode as quick as they're put in place. They will erode away. Only the people can save the republic. Only the people can save their own children. Only the people can save their schools, their educational systems for their children. It's up to the people. You know, we had a meeting today talking about a few things with, you know, a few of us concerning education and different things. But we do have a plan for education. We are writing a textbook for the schools, you know, in order to understand real American history, to understand our Constitution and the law and the differences of the different laws and what our heritage is, what liberty is and what rights are, what is an unalienable right and what rights do we have, what is the right of due process. You know, all of these things, when our children come out of school, they should know all these things. And I'm going to go a step further. There's no reason for school for children to be any more than 8 or 9 years. That's it. They don't need no more than that. If it's a proper education, if it's an education that teaches our children how to think, not what to think, but how to think, and frees not only their flesh, but their soul through understanding the liberty that we have through the common law. And children need to be taught, they need to know what is their duty as one of the people. I'll dare use the word citizen, but as one of the people, what is their duty? You know, they have a duty to give time, maybe to the militia for a period of time. Everyone should join the militia and go away once a year for a week or whatever, whatever the process is. But, you know, we have a duty. We have a duty of being a committee man. At least once in your lifetime, every man, woman, and child, as they get to the age of course, children, they should become a committee man. We should pass that back and forth. We need to re-educate the people, and we need to educate our children properly. With an eighth or a ninth grade education, a proper education, a classical education, which teaches our children to think, not what to think, And to teach them about our heritage and the law and justice, that brings in morality. Morality is required. To have justice, you have to have morality. You cannot be an immoral person, expect to have a justice system that operates if the people are unjust. So morality rolls along with this. But a proper education in 8 or 9 years is easily equivalent, far superior to the high school education that we give, a college education. Our children can have a college-level education within 8 or 9 years of school. And then if they wanted to become a doctor or something special, then they go to an extended education. That's where college comes in. But if you take the ninth grade education test, which we do have up online somewhere, I forget where it's at, maybe someone can find it and pipe it out to where it's at, but you can go take that test, that ninth grade, I think it was an eighth grade or a ninth grade test. I think it was an eighth grade test. An eighth grade test, which was the limit of their education, by the way, okay, back 100 years, 120 years ago or so. This goes back into the late 1800s. That test was college-level education today, okay? So why can't we have that, you know? I sent my son to a private school, really focused in. It was a Christian-based private school. And by the time he was in second grade, he was reading at eighth grade level. All of those children were reading at eighth grade level. All of those children had the ability to get up on a stage and give a speech or sing a song. All of those children. So we can all do it. We just have to believe in our children, and we have to take control of our school system. We do intend, that's part of one of the projects that we will be taking at hand, and that is to get the proper education back into schools and get the decision-making back into the local communities where it belongs and get rid of the centralized education. We need to get the parents involved. And the other duty that the children need to learn and we need to learn is to respond to the grand jury call or the trial jury call. And it should be a privilege to be able to take that position for a week or so, whatever is required of you in order to do that. Also, it's a very underpaid position. You know, it's an insult. It's a total insult of what they do and what they pay people to sit on a jury. And, you know, you get these juries that I've heard about that have been around for 8-9 months. Well, were these people unemployed before they went? How could they go on a jury and stand on a grand, sit in a grand jury day in and day out for 9 months? How could that be possible? I mean, well, what kind of people do they have there? You know, of course they can't, you know, but people should be compensated properly, okay? And we're going to be thinking and talking about that in the future and what that proper thing should be. But clearly, you know, giving someone $25 or $40 a day, whatever it is, I know it's some ridiculous number, and expect them to be able to survive and take care of their family or whatever, and especially they try to keep them as long as they, I've heard some of these are. You know, there's a grand jury out in California that's been sitting there for 2 years, same people. That's unlawful. That is unlawful. You know, a grand jury sits as long as a particular, if they have to be there for a particular case or a group of cases and they have to extend it because it's a big case or something and there's a lot of things to go through, that's one thing. So they're extended sitting. You know, we here, we formed the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury in order to deal with subversion by enemies, both foreign and domestic. And we will continue to sit in this seat and continue to do what we have to do until we deal with that problem and take back this judiciary. And once that's accomplished, then the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury will disband. And the power and the authorities will flow down to the people on the county levels, to the true grassroots, where the people need to decide whatever it is that affects their lives within their counties, within their political subdivisions. That's where we got to bring it. But until we win back the federal courts, until we take back control of our federal judicial system, we can't do anything. First order of business. If we do that, we win the war. Everything else is just clean up behind it. The states will be forced to be obedient to the Constitution, just as the federal government has become obedient to the Constitution at that point in time. Then we will force them to become obedient to the Constitution, or we will indict them with federal indictments, get rid of them, and let them bring in new people to take place within the judicial processes within each one of these state courts in every one of these counties. And this is what we must do, and that's the war. We will win that war. And once we win that war, then it's a matter of time to bring education back to where it belongs to our children. But education must start with the people also. The people must come to an understanding. And we have a plan for that, too, through the committeeman process, going right down into the bedrock of our communities, right to the election districts, where each committeeman is responsible or has constituents of anywhere from 200 to 400 families that they represent. That's where it's possible to do something and to get everything out on the grassroots and to work together in uniform, in unison, all of us across this nation together to take our calls, our schools back. And so we have a plan for this. It's part of our plan. And whatever the president can do on his end to kind of set the stage and get things going up there, that's fine. But it's up to us. It's up to you. It's up to me to take this back, because he cannot take it all back. And even if he had some magic wand and was able to take it back, it'll only fall away again unless the people grab hold and take it. There is going to be a power vacuum. When this whole thing is said and done, there's going to be a power vacuum. And where there's power and a vacuum into that, someone's going to fill that position. And if it's not we the people, then who is it going to be? And how long before we end up back here where we started from? How long? So only the people can save America. Only we can save and reinstate the republic. Okay, anything else? Jan, you might be muted. Jan? Did we lose Jan?
Yeah, this great panel moves you up and down, and I'm not on the right page.
Yeah, you can't figure anything. Oh, by the way, we're going to be moving to Zoom. I'm pretty convinced. Have you looked at that today, Jan?
I didn't find the link in my inbox yet.
Oh, yeah, I never got that either, but I've been looking at the, you know, they have a webinar, a great webinar program. Everything we want and everything we need, they have, and more. So it's a real good program. It's going to cost us money, but not a lot. You know, it's not going to be expensive. In the beginning, it's only going to be $20 a month, and it may end up at some point being $100, $150, $200 a month. But it'll give us, unbelievable, abilities. So we got to get away from this program because this one stinks. This is the worst we've ever had.
In order to enforce whatever process we the people create, I, for one, want to find a constitutional sheriff in Ohio. I don't care if the sheriff is also employed by the government corporation. The process we are creating would contain a clause holding him or her harmless from any liability others may seek to impose upon him within the fake corporate system. Here's what I already know. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association has already told one of my people that they don't respond to inquiries from the public. There is no question from my research that these stand-up guys are being systematically terrorized. There are supposed to be some 500 members, but I can't even find information about who is a member in the state of Ohio. Now, in order to optimally enforce our common law process, hopefully with a constitutional sheriff, corporate, or one of ours, it seems best to try to do so in an unincorporated county in the state. Although I have found many unincorporated towns in my own county in Ohio, I can find nothing about an unincorporated county. Any way to find out this systematically?
Well, look at creating municipalities, creating these corporate entities. This is not who we are. We have trust. We have a government, and it's governments are really trusts. They have positions of trust, so they are trusts, okay? And they should not be corporations. Obviously, this whole process goes back quite some time. It goes really to the Organic Act of 1871, where that was the first incorporated. I think it was the first. Maybe they were incorporating before that, because I have seen places where you drive through a county or someplace and it says incorporated since 1861 or whatever. But I don't know what has been incorporated prior to 1871. But it was the key that took place in 1871 when Washington, D.C. was incorporated, became a municipality, a state within a state within a city. And that state is a foreign state, and they have seized control of our government. They have the controls of our government, and, of course, we know where that leads up the line to. Once we get in power and start to enforce the law will dismantle all unlawful things, and that is unlawful, okay? They have to be dismantled. Corporatism is Nazism. That's what corporatism is. I mean, that's what Nazism is. It's corporatism, and where people seem to own our government, to own pieces here and a piece there, and that's Nazism. So, but we have to get rid of it. And again, it's first order of business. We can't do anything unless we have power, and power requires us to take control of the federal judiciary on the law side. And once we, the people, take control of that, the limit is unlimited. You know, we can do anything we want, anything lawful, of course. But we can get rid of all of these and we must get rid of the unlawful things. And corporations, as far as government is concerned, is all unlawful things. They'll be dismantled. But again, it's going to take time. It's a process, and first order of business must take place. What else?
There is a unified common law court listed somewhere or other on the website for my state, Ohio. But the only information...
What's he saying? There's a what?
There is a unified common law court listed somewhere or other on our website for my state, Ohio. But the only information is a post office box in Jackson, Ohio. No associated name, email, or phone number. How can we do anything with this little information?
Okay,
I asked...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, she just said she asked Gary, and he didn't know either.
All right, first of all, that's not a court, okay? We organized the grand juries in every county across the nation. Well, not every county, but most counties. We did this in every state. I'm sorry, let's step back. We went to all 50 states, and all 50 states organized their counties within. And all these counties that were organized within, created a unified state common law grand jury, which is what that is that they're talking about. It's a common law grand jury for that state. And we got addresses and seals for all of that. Then the states came together for the sole purpose of bringing together the unified United States common law grand jury. No activity at all is to be taking place down on the state common law grand juries or any of the county common law grand juries at this point in time. First of all, people need to be educated, and that's what people need to be going through right now by going through the course that we set together, government by consent. That's to begin with. But all things must be first in order, and that must be, you cannot take the state back. You can't do any, and if anyone tries to run a court of some kind or tries to run the grand jury without proper knowledge, they may end up in trouble and in jail. You got to be really careful. We are so founded on so much the sources and history and the common law itself. We're well founded in, and even by United States Supreme Court decisions and American jurisprudence, it all supports everything we're doing. So if anybody tries to really work things out without the knowledge, they're going to get themselves in trouble, and they're really only going to cause more problems or really confusion than anything else. We all have to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and that's what we're building everything upon. Every individual that gets involved with us must take that vow that they will operate and go forward with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And even more so for the people who are taking the administrative positions within their county. So if you're looking for the help in the courts and the different things, you need to be coming up on the national level. That's where we're at right now. And again, our motto, so to speak, if you want to call it that, is the people must increase and National Liberty Alliance must decrease. But before the people can increase, they have to become educated first. So they need to get the necessary nourishment, the education necessary, in order to be able to step up and take control and power and authority, and to do it lawfully and not injure another person. And so that's what we're working through. So everybody should be working together on a federal level, get involved and get together on a federal level and be ready and prepared on the state level and on the county level to take control when the doors open. And I think the doors are going to open sooner than we realize. And again, we're working on energizing, re-energizing our whole, organization, we might call that, through National Liberty Alliance. But remember, the power and the authority is in the grand jury, okay? National Liberty Alliance is a facilitator. That's all it is. It's a facilitator. It provides the money necessary for the grand jury to operate. It provides a place for communication, organization, and so we're all consistently operating the same way and lawfully under common law. And that's what we all need to learn, okay? So first, let's get educated. Let's fight the battle on the federal level, and you will be delivered the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, down on the grassroots level as soon as we accomplish that goal. But until we accomplish that goal, it's an uphill battle, whatever you're doing, wherever you're at. Connect up here. We're going to be doing something hopefully soon, really, really powerfully organizing the counties
and the states and going right down into the counties and getting people more active in a lot of different things. But time will, you know, it'll all be in due time, and it's moving along. Okay, next.
I have an ongoing case in Wisconsin, my former home state. How do I get the home address of the DA, assistant DA, cop, and judge? It is my understanding these will be required for the joinder.
No, the only thing you need is the name of the court, the name of the judge, and the name of the prosecutor. That's it. Nobody else. If it is a mortgage company situation, then the lawyer for the mortgage company. That's it. We're going to go after the officers of the court for running jurisdictions unknown, kidnapping people into jurisdictions unknown, denying due process and stealing their homes. And that's what we're going to chase them for. They can deny it. They can think it's crazy. They can think anything they want. We really don't care what they think. Time will come when their fiction will become our reality, and then they'll have to pay the piper, you know? So anyway, repeat that question again so I can make sure I answered it completely.
I just want to know how to get the home address of the DA, assistant DA, cop, and judge.
Yeah, go down to the court. Yes. All you got to do, look at the, you got a court address, and you got a name of a court. The judge will send papers to the judge at the court address. You got the court number, you put that in there. And whatever the name of the prosecutor is, usually if it's a state thing, you know, you're a state level or county level, you're going to be dealing with the county DA probably. But whoever that prosecutor is, find out where their office is. You can go down and ask in the courtroom what's the name of the prosecutor and what's their address. That's all. But it should be all on your papers. If you're operating pro se, you should already have all that. If you have a lawyer, it's a phone call to the lawyer to get that information. And he's going to say, what do you want it for? I don't know that you want to get into that conversation. I think it's best to tell him none of your business. Just give it to me. Of course, we should be nice and polite, but nevertheless. Anyway, I guess that's it. What else?
Okay, after joining case for cause and no response, does the case change venue? Will I have to continue to travel to the courtroom for more nonsense? Does conflict of interest come into play? What happens after no response? I have several things they have not responded to from me and would be happy to share with you.
Well, look, once we file the papers and move it into federal court, they should cease and desist anything they're doing. The question is, will they? It depends on how much they believe, how much they rest in their fiction and not in reality. Because remember, and we better act this way, you have to understand it before you can act this way. You have to have knowledge to be able to act with knowledge. And we have to understand that we are the authority. We are the power. We make the decisions, not them. And that's how we have to start acting, like the boss, because we are the boss. Can you repeat the question? Jan? You must be muted.
Sorry, I had to let my dog in. First things first.
Yeah,
after joining the case for cause and no response, does the case change venue? Will I have to continue to travel to the courtroom for more nonsense?
Yeah, well, once we move it for cause, okay, it should all be working in the federal courts, okay? It depends on, you know, who they talk to in the federal court and what they believe and think and on whether they're going to give us credence or not. But nevertheless, the power and the authority will come as long as the people step up because it's our power and it's our authority. And people have to believe that, okay? You know, so we have to do what we have to do. If they do call you into the court while you've already moved it into court, I wouldn't not show up. I would show up. I wouldn't not show up. I would show up. And I would inform the court, this has been moved into federal court. And now the judge may deny and say, yeah, I called up and I talked with Judge so-and-so or I talked with the clerk or whatever. I doubt they'll talk with the clerk because we've informed the clerks that if they get a phone call and they tell them that this case does not exist or it's been closed down, that would be concealing because we're a common law court. We have nothing to do with equity. We have nothing to do with civil law. We are a common law court. We open it up. We open it up properly. We made our own forms. We send it in. They accepted them, and we've been filing papers. They've been taking our papers. Court has been in session for over 2 years, and now it's in decision time. We are now making orders and decisions and orders, and they need to comply to them. And we've told the clerks up there, so when the phone calls come in now, and you tell people this case has been closed or something, because and remember we remind the clerks that we had indicted this judge Khan, who tried to close us down 3 times already. He's tried to close us down 3 times. He failed. How did he fail? Well, the clerks refused to respond. The clerks refused to take the papers out of the court. The clerks refused to burn them, mutilate them, throw them away, send them back. They refused. Why? Because we told them if they did, we're going to indict them. So they do have the fear of the people. I have a feeling these clerks are reading our papers. I can't believe that they're not. If anyone's reading our papers, it's the clerks. I really do believe that. And they're getting an education. They're starting to get their eyes open. They're starting to realize who the people are, what the true powers are, and what this whole sham has been all about. It's nothing but fraud. There's fraud on the court by the judge, fraud on the court by these bar attorneys, fraud on the court. And they're guilty of this. And they only have, so much time to, kind of come to the right side and work with us, and we'll ignore anything. But, of course, they still have to pay for their sins in the sense that if they've injured someone and someone comes up and wants to be restored, and that judge did it to me, well, they're going to have to pay the price, whatever that price may be. But nevertheless, at least they'll escape our wrath, which is indictment for subversion, indicting these tyrants, you have to respond if the courts call, and it's going to take time, and some cases, some places they may respond properly and do the right thing, and again, I think once that starts to happen, more and more is going to happen. But justice will be served in the end. It just may take more time. We're doing the best we can on our end, but I don't have control of the timetable. That's God's job. Next.
Is the state case against my person created by the state the case that will be joined, or do I need to create my own case before joinder?
Read that again. Did they have a case going? Read that again.
There is a case against him. Is the state case against my person created by the state the case that will be joined, or do
yes.
I need to create? Okay.
No. Yes, that's the case that's joined.
Okay, good.
Okay.
That's all I have, John.
Okay.
You're
done. Is Brent here?
I didn't see him yet. But
yeah, I don't see him either. Unless he signed in at not being a host, he could
right.
be. Brent, if you're here and you didn't sign in as a host, get into the Q&A. We'll see you there and we'll unmute you there. But he usually signs in as a host, so and he has controls. But I don't see him. I don't see him coming in.
No.
Okay. One other thing before we get started. Everyone, please try to stay focused on what it is that we're trying to do. Become educated. Ask questions. Give us advice, give us ideas and thoughts, get involved. If you have a case, we're going to talk about it in general. We don't want to get into the details of anyone's case, none, zero. We're not fighting anyone's case for them. What we are doing is we're fighting with them and for them the fact that they have been moved to jurisdictions unknown and they have been injured. And they've been denied their due process, and they must be restored. So we will pursue restoring the people to their original state prior to being brought under these conditions that they've been brought under in the courts that they are stuck in. We are, and That is what we're asking for, generally speaking, in the amicus curiae, where we're denying them jurisdiction. But if they continue in that process and they ignore that, and then we have to go to the process of moving, then we've added something in there. We've added for pain and suffering. And generally, we've added in $1,000 in face value real money. And we define that very specifically as Morgan silver dollars. 1,000 Morgan silver dollars. That's for pain and suffering. And we're only doing 1,000. There may be some cases we may pump up more. Definitely with children, you know, the family courts where people are being destroyed there. How can you repair the minds and that they've destroyed? And in some cases, even the bodies of some of these children, they've destroyed in their system. But we haven't figured out some kind of a scale for that. But again, we're looking to have the person restored to the original state. If the house was taken, we're looking to have that house returned. If it's impossible for that house to be returned, maybe it's been knocked down, commercial building, I don't know. But if that's impossible, then they need to compensate them reasonably what value would be. And maybe even more because, you know, I know for me where I live, I'm very happy where I live. I don't want to move to another town. I'm just very happy. It's really a great place to live where I'm living. And I just wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And if that's the situation, then, you know, that has to be compensated if they can't, you know, be back to their original place of being. But anyway, people have to be restored to their original, you know, condition. And once the case is moved, added on top of that, $1,000. And $1,000 is only for the violation of your unalienable right of due process. It's for the violation of being taken into jurisdictions unknown. You have every right to pursue further damages in another court case thereafter. And of course, if we're getting justice at that point, then we probably have courts that are honest courts coming up, and you'll be able to take it into a court and really have a real court of justice deal with your problem. Okay, I think that's... okay, is there anything else on that? Where did that question come from? Jan, was that you? Or was I just expounding on something? I forget.
You were just expounding on something, I think.
Okay,
John.
I was expounding. Okay, yeah, I was just expounding on the fact that let's stay focused. I need to get focused, too, then. But let's stay focused. Don't go into the details of any case. We don't want to discuss them, okay? All right, let's take our first caller. It's a 716 number. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 to get into the queue. First caller, 716. Give us your first name and your state.
Hi, my name is Andy. Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead. What's your name?
Andy.
Eddie. Okay, what state you're from?
I'm from New York, near Buffalo.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Eddie.
No, it's Andy, A-N-D-Y.
Oh, Andy. Andy from New York. Sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
That's okay. I was wondering if you guys know about the Hudok lawsuit, H-U-D-O-K. Where they spent 4 years suing the federal government?
Were they what? Suing the federal government for what?
To get all of our rights back.
Oh, well, that's what we're doing, but go ahead. I'm not familiar with that. Maybe you can get us information. Do you have a website or something?
Yeah, it's called Hudok, H-U-D-O-K, .info.
Okay. All right, we'll take a look into that and see what they're doing.
That's the website, and there's an opt-in documents that have to be mailed in by November 1st. I did mine right away, and I'm trying to get everybody online notified about this so they can get it done by November 1st. It's very simple. There's two pages. You got to sign them and put your initials on them. They don't have to be notarized, but you do have to make electronic copy and email them. The instructions are on the documents.
Okay, yeah, I'm on the site now taking a look. How long has this site been around, do you know?
Not very long. The lawsuit itself was won in August, and they just put up this information, I believe, on the 3rd of October.
Okay, it's an arbitration award. What was the case? What did they hold the case for? I'll have to watch some of these videos and see what they're doing. Maybe talk to these people. It's a very simple website. There's not much there, is there?
No, but those documents, there's two documents that are most important that everybody has to opt in by 11-1. And, yes, I think you guys should join forces.
Well, we'll take a look and see if we're compatible and if there's an interest and if there's a benefit. So if there is, definitely. So we'll take a look. I see, an arbitration award, opt-in, it's your choice, free will. What, why, how, click here to find out. And then they have an interview by Field McDonald. Okay, I will take a look at this. Gerard, if you're listening here, maybe you might want to take a look at this too. Jan, anybody else on the leadership level, take a look at this and see once what they think. Maybe we'll discuss it during the week.
It's
H-U-D, like HUD, H-U-D, HUD, okay, H-U-D, okay, .info. And I'll take a look tomorrow on it. I'll save it for tomorrow and take a look at it.
Okay, great. That was my question.
Okay, if all goes well, we're going to be moving over to, as we mentioned a little earlier, we're going to be moving over to Zoom, and we're going to try to do that by next week. Hopefully we're going to be able to do that. Jan, get the leadership together on a meeting this week. I'd like to say as soon as possible, maybe tomorrow late afternoon, early evening, or whatever's required, even if it has to be night, we'll do it at night. But try to get the leadership together. Let's get together, and we'll go into the Zoom room, start playing around. I'll open up a pro tomorrow account, and let's play around in the Zoom room and see how it'll work for us. Okay?
You got a good time, possibly?
Well, tomorrow's good. I'd like to do it as soon as possible. If we have to do it Wednesday, we'll do it Wednesday.
Okay.
But, I'd like to do it before dinner, but if, you know, we have West Coast people, East Coast people, you know, if it's got to be 9 o'clock at night, then we'll do it at 9, you know?
Okay.
Whatever you can work out. We want to get as many people as possible to come and put. Well, again, we don't really need a lot of people. But we do need the people who are the host of this program to come to that meeting and learn how things go. I see Brent's here, so I'm going to pass the mic to him for a short while. Brent comes in. He's a host also, but we can give him the keys as the host. It'll probably be the same thing as this works here, Brent. You come in with a phone number or through Zoom or any way you want. You can come in anyway. I mean, any phone, you can have an Android or something? I'm not too familiar with all these smartphones. Android, or what is it called?
Android.
Android, okay. An Android or one of these other smartphones or whatever. Or you can come in on just a regular phone. You can come in on your browser. You can come in on Zoom. There's so many ways to come in on this. And when we do this, we may start doing some PowerPoints. You know, maybe our studies will be in PowerPoint, so there'll be a visual as well as hearing it. But you know, if you don't have the visual because you're coming in on a regular telephone, you still will at least get the audio, and you get the audio anyway, just an extra benefit for those who can come into a browser and or through Zoom itself. But
did you get a link for the good summary of the Zoom so we know how to get into it to start with?
I'm going to research more tomorrow. I'm going to be talking with the people at Zoom. I talked with them today. I think what we'll do is I'll just sign up. I'll pass the key link to get in, and we'll all come in, and we'll play around with it. We're going to come in. There's two sides to it. There's the Zoom, and there's the webinar. We're more interested in the webinar. Okay,
right.
That's where our interests really are, the webinar side of things. But it's very, looks like a really good program. I'm anxious, really, to try this out. But once we get going, and if we have problems, we can call in and... they have you can request a guide who will come in and walk us through all of the tools. So we'll probably do that, but let's play with it first ourselves, and then we'll have a guide come in and work with us. And if we can get this all comfortable by the end of the week, then we'll send out the new access to the new program. We'll reset everything up on our website. We'll send out information on email, so people keep an eye on the email. It'll go out special message, and it'll also be also on our regular weekly message. It'll be pretty simple. We'll suggest for the best way to deal with Zoom is to download Zoom itself. It's free. You don't have to pay for it. If you want to use it for other purposes, and maybe having meetings or even communicating with more than one person at a time, then you'd have to come in. I think their low level is $14.95. The pro is $19.95, which is what we're going to be coming in at. And then that allows up to, depends on how many people are coming in. That allows up to about 300 people in a room. And over that, they cost you a little more. I don't think it really gets to, from looking at it, I mean, we can have as many as 10,000 people in a room. The limit, it's got a good limit on it. So we can really grow with this thing, or it can grow with us, shall I say, or whatever, however you want to see that. So we'll see what we'll do. Hopefully we'll be able to send that message out that next Monday will be a Zoom room. But again, if you're coming in on a phone, you're still coming on your phone. You could put Zoom on your Android or what's the other one? Android and what's the other one?
iPhone.
iPhones. Okay, iPhones. You could put Zoom on those. And coming in on Zoom, you can get the desktop visual on whatever we're doing on the desktop, if anything. In the beginning, we may not do too much, but I think we're going to go move to PowerPoints for some of our studies and reading papers and so on and so forth. Okay. All right, where are we now?
Ready for Brent.
We'll move over to Brent before we pick up any more calls. Brent, you want to take Mike for a short while?
Well, I have a request, John.
Yeah.
Two requests. Number one, I sent you a question on the Skype or something. Anyway, look and see, because I'd forgotten something you had said to me, and I'd ask you to help me remember. Number two, is it possible, if I'm able to come on, that I do so at the bottom of the hour? Because I'm traveling, and if I get back to my room, I can pull up the thing that I had prepared to say.
All right, we will continue then with our open forum here, and if and when you get ready, just pipe in between calls and just let me know you're ready, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. And meanwhile, you say you put a message for me over on Skype.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Simple question. All right, thanks. I'll talk to you a little bit.
Is that something you want me to respond to online or in private?
Oh, online's all right, yeah.
Okay.
Just had a question about something you'd ask me, and I couldn't remember what it was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I have to remember what it was, too.
I'll remind you. I think I remind you about the subject in the question, and you'll remember once you see it.
I'll pick up on it, I'm sure. So we'll talk. Appreciate it. Okay. Okay, so we'll come back to Brent a little later if he's able to stabilize somewhere. So let's move on to our next caller. Next person is Suzanne Young. What's your state, Suzanne?
Hi, this is Suzanne. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Suzanne. What state are you in?
I'm in North Carolina right now.
Suzanne from North Carolina. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just came across your website just a little while ago, and so I was wondering. My husband and I have bought and sold real estate, and we got slammed with foreclosures, and they've all passed. I don't have anything active, but I didn't. So one of the questions is, do you have any joinders for, do you have a list of the mortgage companies and stuff that...
Well, if you've been foreclosed on and you lost your home already, you lost the properties already?
Yeah, our main home, the first one was, was in Colorado in 2009, and then there were a couple others in between, a couple in North Carolina.
Well,
Our driver's licenses are from Colorado, and the properties are kind of all over, but our main house that we left, our primary residence, was foreclosed on a second in 2015.
You can join those cases. All you need to do is be able to go back and get the name of the court where they did all the thievering, and you find the number, the court name, the number, the judge, and also the lawyer for the mortgage. And again, as long as you got the number, you can go into the records and look all that stuff up. But there is a form that you could fill out. Have you found the form online yet, Arette? Yet?
I have not gone and perused it yet.
If you go up to our website, nationalliberty.org, click on Abusive Court. Read that page very carefully.
Okay.
There are four steps to do. The fifth step is to fill out the form. So at the bottom, number five, after you've done first four, you come to five, and then you click on that, and you'll get into a form. Once you fill out the form and click it in, I know we're a little bottlenecked right now, but I don't think it's going to be for much longer. But generally speaking, we should be able to, respond within a couple of days, get the joinder agreement going, and then work on an amicus curiae, which we discussed a little earlier. And then move from there. So, as long as you dig up the information, put it together, and get it to us, you can join cases together.
Okay.
In common law, there's no such thing as a statute of limitation because there are no statutes. And the case is as viable as the witnesses and evidence you can gain. If you got a case 50 years old, theory, you can resurrect that case. If you can resurrect all of the witnesses and all of the documentation, pretty difficult to do, I'm sure. But it's possible. But that would be the only thing that would cause some kind of a limitation would be just reality.
First-hand knowledge. Okay. Have you heard of the I Am Some Dude website and Commercial Redemption?
What's it called?
The website's IamSomeDude.com, but they teach about about interacting with the government and stuff like that. But one of the processes we sent was a commercial redemption where you ask them for proof. You send out a proof of claim and you do three letters and you send them, 30 days apart. I did that for one of the mortgage companies, Soteris, and that was just this past a year ago. And they foreclosed on it anyway in January. So that one I guess I can add to the joiner. But I've done the commercial redemption. Pardon me?
No, go ahead, finish up.
I've done the commercial redemption process, which is administrative processing, asking them for proof of claim and then defaulting them on some property, on a tax here in North Carolina, property tax here in North Carolina in the house we're presently in, and on that mortgage and on a couple of other things, but I haven't been able to enforce it. And so when I heard about what you're doing, I was thinking maybe that's what, I could take that as evidence because I mailed it registered mail and they didn't respond and sent them consideration. So I guess part of my question, when you're speaking, you said it often just takes 30 days to 60 days to show proof that they don't have any evidence and they don't have a case, or they don't have jurisdiction. Maybe that's what you said. And I guess my question is, what paperwork or what do you do to get them to confess or not confess, but basically say that they don't have jurisdiction?
All right. Well, look, you've done some good work already. You've understood the concept of proof of claim. Every court requires a proof of claim. Someone comes out to get you, they got to have some proof. It's got to be document, some kind of a document. It's got to be an affidavit of some type. And without an affidavit to open the court, they can't proceed. And they are proceeding without affidavits. They have no claim on you whatsoever. And that proof of claim,
right,
they didn't answer because they can't answer. And so they did default.
Right.
They knew that their buddy judge up there would take care of them because he'll just ignore it and slap his hammer and say, yeah, go away and let them continue. So they'll just ignore you because people don't know what to do after that anyway. You know, at that point, you should move it into federal court. There's things you could do, but you have to have knowledge to do that. So,
right.
So you can join it to us, absolutely. Dig up the information and put it together, and we'll join it in. And again, we're chasing these people for, you know, hijacking us into jurisdictions unknown and denying you due process. And we
right.
do intend on indicting these judges that take it to the hilt and just keep, you know, ignoring and doing whatever they please,
right,
and just continue to think that they are the law. At some point, we are going to indict them.
Right.
And, you know, and again, like I said earlier, we're not promising people, we're not promising people the world, okay? We have to be realistic about this. Things are going to take time. It's an uphill battle. We're in the beginning of really pushing
right.
this idea through the system. It's going to take a little while. And so there's no sunshine and lollipops real quick. But there are some cases, I think, that, you know, it could happen. It could happen quick in some cases. Doubtfully,
right.
Because yours is kind of old and out of the game. So, you know, it's too late for the judge to do anything. But he's already committed his dirty deed. And so did the lawyer that represents the other side. They've done the evil.
In that in the house of our main house in Colorado in 2015, we had actually done an amicus and sent it in and tried to move it to federal court, but we had to go to Denver, which is 3 hours away. Anyway, then they had a $400 fee, and we didn't have that anyway available at the time.
Who did
the
amicus curiae?
Who did it, or is
who did the amicus curiae?
I did, because I did it with another friend. Basically, I had taken a contract law class and series, and so anyway, we did that, and it was ignored, and we tried to move it to federal, but because we didn't pay the $400 fee, so
if you move in a case for cause, there is no fee. But,
I just learned that when I listened to your thing in July, like your July 30th call. I just listened to like 3 days ago or something.
Okay.
I have another question for my girlfriend, who actually her son and mom of a baby both went to jail because the baby died. And so they were both accused of, the mom was accused of manslaughter, and that was in Texas. And they were like 19 or 18 and 20 or something, 22.
These people are so evil. What makes them think it was manslaughter?
Well, because I wasn't there. I've only heard through my girlfriend, but basically, the baby was born premature, and the couple left because he didn't have a Colorado driver's license, and it was winter time. You know, they headed out because they wanted warmer, so they were going to live in the van and stay in warmer places, and the baby died, so they think that the mother, you know, shook it or
Well, yeah. Well, again, they can think what they want. They have to have proof to begin with, and we wouldn't get into the details of that case, but it definitely is a case where the jurisdiction's unknown. They had no power authority anyway, so, yeah, that case could be handled, what we're doing. But, you know, look, it. Everything
so
is intense.
How can she do that, the question? Because Brianna's in jail in Texas, and she's been there for now two or three years.
When a parent loses a child, I mean, what are you going to pour upon that person? How much more are you going to pour upon that person? Even if it was just a stupid decision, and when they think back and say, oh, boy, maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, look, it, that's not a crime. There's no intent. You have to have intent to kill your child, and they have to prove that. And unfortunately, people go to jail without proving intent. And there's no witnesses. There's got to be a witness if they're going to claim. There's got to be someone.
Exactly. That was what
somewhere.
The whole thing was.
Yeah.
It was
We'd love to help that case. If they've got a next friend, we can do a habeas corpus.
If they have a what, did you say?
They need a next friend. They need somebody who's familiar with the case, knows them, has contact with them, and is willing.
Okay, well, that's their mom.
Well, if their mother wants to come on as what's called the next friend, they can do.
Do
an affidavit. It's the only time secondhand information through an affidavit is accepted. You know, when you can call. Look, if you tell me the story and I do an affidavit on that story, it's hearsay. Okay, so it doesn't hold up in court.
Right.
But if you're incarcerated and you're in jail and you tell your story to me and I do an affidavit as a next friend telling in the affidavit the story of what the person is on their behalf, and you put, we'll help people write that, and they do it as a next friend, that's accepted in the courts because,
the next friend could be a mom or dad.
They got to be over 18. They have to have a heart that's beating blood through their system. In other words, they got to be alive. I guess the only qualifications I can think of.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. And then I have another question, if that's okay. I saw that you need court administrators or county ones or whatever. Is that done in the location that you're living?
Wherever you live,
go
you
ahead.
Can do it. If you want to, I live very close to another county. Let's put it this way. Right across the bridge from me is another county. There's a bridge that goes in and across the river, and there's another county in that river on that other side.
Okay.
On this side of the river, the courthouse is like right there off the bridge, you know? If someone lived across the bridge in the other county and they wanted to work in this county because this courthouse is closer than the one that they may have to travel halfway across the county to go to work, then they can sign up in the county. But generally speaking, you sign up in your own county, and it's a paid position that will eventually become a paid position, maybe sooner than we realize. There are things in the works. But in any event, you have to have an education for it. In the sense that, you have to be prepared for it. Nobody has the proper education to fulfill these positions yet, but we are training people by going through our courses. We have a civics course, and we have a government by consent course.
Yeah.
Take those two courses.
Okay.
We're writing handbooks, and we're also writing books and even textbooks for the schools. You just get educated and go through the process, of that. And you could take the position. It's a professional position. It's going to be a decent paying job with benefits, and it's going to be controlling. Really, the job is administrating to the juries, the grand jury and a trial jury, bringing them together, orientating them, preparing them for the court case that they're going to hear or cases that they're going to consider for indictment. So you prepare them. We will lay out the program and to be exercised for people to be prepared. And that's it, And we also operate, those four individuals will operate as the investigative body for the grand jury. They may go and investigate on behalf of people, situations, those administrators. They may make phone calls on behalf of people to fix a problem with the government, maybe that's abusive to an individual or refusing information and or refusing to do the job. You know, we see a crime, we can start investigating. We can empower the grand jury once they're formed. We can clear the way, make the phone calls for them to visit places if they need to in a case. You know, so that's what the administrators do. It's a very rewarding job, very involved, and everyone takes a vow to the Creator, and
right.
That vow is to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And
right.
And we police each other. There's four people working together in a county, and when one person goes astray, maybe breaks their vow some way, the other three need to reel them back in and bring them back into the game. If they can't do that, we've set up a process to deal with those problems.
Right. So my last question on that topic is, are there specific – so we're in North Carolina now, but likely moving back to Colorado. And so are there certain counties that don't have any administrators, or
generally speaking, I think most counties are open to have an opening. We have, let me see how many administrators we have at the moment, people who have signed up to become administrators. Hang on a minute. We have a total of 1,110 grand jury, well, we call them grand jury administrators, but they also administer to the juries, too, the petit juries. But the positions, that's 1,110 positions have already been taken, and that's over the course of 3,100 and some odd, 3,133 counties. So,
right.
You know,
so
likelihood
50,000.
Is whatever county you sign up for, there's still an opening in that county. But bear in mind,
okay.
Here's the key to this whole thing. When the time comes, okay, you know, whoever signs up first really kind of gets the position as long as they're doing their schooling. But when the time comes, if you got a person who's maybe five in line and they've done all of their necessary, courses. They've taken the courses and they've kept up to date and following along with things, and the other person is lackadaisical in it, and that person who's already prepared and qualified and achieved certain accomplishments, they're going to take the place. It's not going to necessarily be first come, first serve, although generally speaking, it is that way. But again, you got someone signs up and they've only done 5% of the course, and you got someone else who signed up on number 5 or 6 place and they've done 80% or 100% of the course. Well, that person's more interested in that position than the other, I'm sure. But that person could still get, if all the positions are taken. But no matter what, you don't have to live in the county you work in. So you can go to the next county over and work there.
But living nearby, physically nearby, is optimal.
Right, right.
Or you'd have to.
And sometimes living nearby may be the county next door. Thanks for the call, Suzanne.
Thank you.
All right, let's take our next caller. It's a 404 number. Please give us, you've been unmuted. Please give us your first name and your state.
Hi, my name is Mike, North Carolina.
Mike from North Carolina. Go right ahead, Mike.
Okay, going through a divorce horror story. Let me first say I appreciate what you're doing, reading that scripture, all the work you guys are doing. But, boy, this thing is a mess. 61% of my income was taken by the judge in alimony child support and made to pay it twice through contempt. And the house is 3 months behind. Thinking about filing bankruptcy, Chapter 7. I'm no longer in the state where the divorce took place at. Can I give the trustee the house in the bankruptcy, even though the judge in the temporary order said that the alimony was for the mortgage?
Yeah, you know, you got a situation. Here's the problem, okay? And we all, most of us have this problem. Maybe not everybody, but most of us have this problem. When we get married, we went and got licenses. Big, big mistake. Okay, that's how dumb we were, okay? When we got that license, we made the state a partner with us. So
That's why they have control over these divorces, okay? And that's a major, major problem. We want to change this system. We can't do nothing right now, but when we get to the other side, we're going to change the system. Definitely change the system with family court. And I think the way divorces are handled and stuff, we're probably going to get, well, again, the whole thing with the fact that they became your partner is a fraud to begin with, because they didn't really expound and expose their true intents. Okay, there was no real meeting of the minds where people understood what that meant when you got a permit, you know, a license to get married. People didn't understand that, and therefore the contract is null and void because they didn't share everything with you. So that's a position that can be taken. I don't know. We're trying. We take on certain cases. Any case where the government is coming out after you, we take on those cases, and you know, for joinder. We also deal with mortgage company problems, traffic problems. You know, if people want to go through the hilt and make the fight with them, you know, they don't have jurisdiction, they don't have authority, we'll work them, you know, we'll join those cases. You know, and the joining of those cases do a couple of things. Number one, it assists the people. It helps people out. They have no place else to go, and we eventually, we do believe we'll be successful. It's going to take time. And so that's one thing. But the other side of that coin is it's evidence. Evidence of all of these courts that are running with jurisdictions unknown under civil law, which has nothing to do with our law. Our Constitution says law and equity. It says nothing about civil law. They've defined civil law as Roman law. They have literally defined it themselves. They defined it as civil action. They combined. They think that they had the power and the authority under Rule 2, which was the Ruled Enabling Act of 1934, and gave the Supreme Court the power and the authority, so they claimed, to write rules. And that kind of makes sense. But Rule 2, what they wrote, was they actually changed the Constitution and they changed law. They literally changed it under Rule 2. Where do they think they could do that from? And how is it that everyone believes that? Are we that dumb? That something that you can change the that a court can change the Constitution by a rule, because what the Rule 2 says is it combined natural law. It says this, common law. I think it uses the word common law. They combined common law with equity into one case called civil action, called a civil court, civil law. Okay, and then they divided that into two. Civil actions a criminal action. Okay, so they and they call it civil law. Well, look at, you go look up civil law, it has nothing to do with us. That brings you to the municipality law, the law of the city. And it's all about control, the city controlling. They did that in Washington, D.C. They do that in every county, every state, every town. I know here in New York, Gerard was telling me, I think it was Gerard telling me this, that there were some towns or some counties that actually did escape that and never went along with that. I know someone had a call in wondering what counties might be, but there are some out there. So all of this is unlawful, you know? Now, your case is a divorce case, right?
Correct.
And what is they trying to rob? They're trying to, what are they trying to do?
Oh, they found me in contempt, saying I didn't pay it, drug me back into court, and I held up the printout from the child support and the paychecks I wrote her for the alimony, and the judge looked at the deputy and said, lock him up. And so my family had to send the money down and bail me out, and attorney fees, so I had to pay it twice, and that was a snowball effect. I've been behind ever since, and they drug me back in court again trying to fight it and lock me up again, and my family bailed me out again. So, you know, it's a mess, but, you know, I read something on your website, like you said, one person wrote, said something. Basically, the Bar Association have a standing army with the Sheriff Department, and whether they give us an illegal command or a legal command, they're going to follow it. It's just, we're in bad shape right now. And I try to explain this to well-educated people that, you know, and they seem to not to get it. I don't know if it's apathy or if they're going on with their lives, they're so busy, but they just don't seem to understand how much trouble we're in right now, what's going on, and how the country's been kidnapped. And it's really scary, and I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, with your case, I don't know how we would handle it. I mean, look at it. If they did put you in jail, we can do a habeas corpus. They really don't have the power, the authority to do that. They think they do, but they really don't. And you know, there's nothing more dangerous or fearful than ignorance in action. And by the way, for that last caller, we were talking, and if they're going to do something with that case, I don't know whether I mentioned this, you know, we definitely would need a copy in your case anyway, the challenge of the, goodness, what was it? They didn't challenge jurisdiction, but they, that they didn't have a proof of claim. So that paper that they wrote for that, and then also the secondary paper, which was the, a default. So I did, you did an affidavit of default. So if you do sign up, those are the two papers we need to see. Hopefully they're not too long. All right, but back to you. Back to you and yours. I don't know that we can do anything with divorce cases. But again, the system stinks and it needs to be changed. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're so unrighteous in things. They really are. You know? They really are.
I'll keep listening. I'll call in. I'll keep listening every Monday. Appreciate everything and everybody calling in. And I pray for everybody. God bless you all.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike. Okay, let's take our next caller. It's a 414 area code. You've been unmuted. Please give us your first name and your state.
My first name is Shanquil, and I'm in Wisconsin.
Okay, in Wisconsin. How do you spell your first name? Chantel, did you say?
Shanquil, S-H-A-N-Q-U-I-L.
Okay, Shanquil. Go right ahead.
All right. I actually have two cases. I know the one case I've been working on with my brother, his habeas corpus has been getting the judge is basically just looking at it and just denying it, basically, without realizing all of the things that he's bringing up and the points, they're just being ignored. And so I know we're not getting into the actual cases. But
okay, what did you file that he's ignoring? Did you say you filed a habeas corpus?
Yes, we filed the habeas corpus for my brother who's in prison.
Okay,
and
did
the judges are ignoring it. Huh?
Did we do that for you, or you did that?
No, my brother did it, and I filed it for him. He wrote it up in prison, and I filed it for him, and the judge is just basically shooting it down without even looking at any of the merits or arguments in the whole habeas.
Okay, here's the problem. Okay, here's and what prison is he in? Is he in a state prison, county prison?
He's in a state prison in Wisconsin right now.
And they convicted him in a state court?
Yeah, he was convicted. He was actually convicted in Arizona, and then Arizona extradited. Wisconsin came, extradited him, and he got convicted here in Wisconsin. He served his time in Arizona, and then Wisconsin came and kidnapped him, and they didn't follow any of the extradition laws. So that's really where we're at, and they're not paying attention to that.
Okay. Well, look at this is a this is an issue of right of due process. The jurisdiction for that falls under the federal court. That's one of the jobs they have. And so habeas corpuses should be taken into a federal court for a federal court to hear, and they should be calling all the people in to show cause why this person should not be released. And hopefully you can build a good case and be able to make a position where they can't answer, and hopefully you can get a release. But was he tried by a jury?
No, never been tried by a jury at all. Nope.
But he's been convicted.
Yep, he was convicted. I believe that was with just a judge. I don't think there was a jury involved at that time. It's been 20 years, so I really honestly can't remember.
Yeah. I mean, did he make a deal?
Nope. They tried to get him to make a deal, and he said, "No, I'm not making a deal, and I don't agree with any of it."
Was he indicted, do you know, or did they just arrest him and go through the process? Was there an indictment? Well,
no indictment. There wasn't any indictment. Isn't indictments only with federal, or is that?
Well, no, indictment, you look at, you can't, for any infamous crime, okay, an infamous crime requires a grand jury indictment. And an infamous crime, according to Black's Law and some Supreme Court decision, an infamous crime is any crime that requires a jail sentence. And it does not say how many days in jail in order for it to be infamous. If you look at, I don't even want to spend one day in jail, okay?
Right,
me either. The government, the whole thing about common law and the great thing about common law, if we can have it applied properly, is the fact that the king can't come out and just throw you in his dungeon for as long as he wants and beat you up and do whatever he wants to you. And,
right.
And that's what they do here. The judges come in, they throw you in jail, they do whatever they want with you. And they don't obey no rules, no processes, nothing. Look, if there was no grand jury, at least you would think that they would give you a stacked make-believe grand jury, because they're good at that, statutory grand jury. But even that is null and void because it doesn't fit the bill. There's the common law, period. And the common law, that's the process of a grand jury and a trial jury, all under common law. Anything statutory is just trying to look like common law. That's all that is. So... if he's in jail and he has not, look at right there on a habeas corpus, if you want to get the information together and find out for sure whether that's the case and you want, we'll do the habeas corpus for you. But you got to make absolute sure that there was no indictment and that there was no jury trial. How many years did they give him?
He actually got, at this point, I really honestly don't know because my daughter is 18 now and she was a newborn at the time. So it's been so long, but I've been just giving him case law because while he was in Arizona, he did not have a law library. So I've just been the person that's been visiting him and taking him case law and helping him to build his case and understand subject matter jurisdiction and all of that, and to always challenge it. But they are the attorneys that we hired never wanted to challenge subject matter jurisdiction. They wanted to leave that out. They wanted to not challenge that because they didn't want it to look like they were going against the state, per se.
Right. The judge wouldn't let them. That's why they wouldn't do it. And that's the bottom line, and that's evil too, the judge controlling the lawyers like that. But I tell you, if there is no grand jury indictment and if there is no trial by jury, that's really pretty bad. I mean, I can't believe that, but check in.
Yeah, I don't believe it is. I honestly don't believe that there is at all.
Let us know, and we'll give you some thoughts at that point.
Yep, and I definitely will, because I'm back and forth with my brother because, you know, I've been his person and his only communication. So at any rate, I have another thing, but also I got a couple of things I wanted to tell you. I found out about you guys through TJ, which with his organization, You Are Law. That's how I found out about you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been fighting a case of my own since 2009, and basically what happened was the state of Wisconsin came and shut down like 119 of our child care centers, and these child care centers, of course, were getting stipends, or if you could say funding for children that were impoverished, and so they said that all 119 of so-called, because I'm not black, but because that's the color of a crayon, but that's what they label us as. They said that all those black women and child care providers were committing fraud by, you know, with their child care centers. So at any rate, that happened in 2009. I was the spokesperson for all of us, and, you know, they were coming after all of us at one time. They were making up false cases. They were putting together false documents so that they can, find, make a case. They made our employees turn against us, told our employees, if you don't say XYZ about this provider, then we're going to get you for a charge. And we're going to take your food stamps and we're going to take your tax refund. And then they also changed paperwork and changed dates on documents so that they can make it look like women weren't where they claimed they were at certain times. And so I've been fighting this. I've written a book. I haven't released the book yet. But at any rate, I'm one of the ones who won my case. And so a lot of times we think that judges don't do the right thing, but by the grace of God, the judge did the right thing in my case. In 2011, he gave me a favorable decision after I went through so much to get to it. He gave me a favorable decision, and he said that the department, the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families, they denied me due process. He said they didn't give me a chance to defend myself. They need to open my center back up and pay me for all eligible child care. Now, that's the trick, though. He said that, and so I never had an actual dollar amount, so I came up with a dollar amount by adding up all the contracts that I still had open with them at the time. It came to $160,000. And so I went back to that court, and this is another thing. Here in Wisconsin, the judges rotate every so many years. So some judges will go from civil to criminal, from criminal to civil until they retire. So back in 2011, I got that favorable decision from a judge called Tim Wachowiak. And so now it's a different judge in his, which is Judge Hanscher. I went to him like a year and a half ago, and I said, hey, you guys still owe me money from this judgment that this judge gave me. He said, well, the Department of Children and Families is saying that they gave you to you, and you're saying that they didn't, so this is not the venue. You're going to have to go to the Wisconsin State Claims Board. And I'm like, what? So I had an attorney at the time, and he said, Shanquil, everything's going to be okay. You're just going to go to the Wisconsin State Claims Board and let them know exactly what happened and deal with it from there. So at any rate, this attorney bailed out on me. And so I had to go up there and face all of these people by myself. And I showed them my case, laid out everything, because I'm fearless anyways. I didn't care that I was by myself. So at any rate, they gave me $10,000 after that of the $160,000. They said, Shanquil, we're not saying that what you're saying didn't happen, but what we're saying is we can't pay you that whole $160,000 because we would have to write up a bill in the legislature to give you all of that money. So what we can give you is $10,000. And I said, but that doesn't make sense. I said, but that's cool. I'll take it, but I'm going to go back to this judge so this judge can pay me my money. And I really like what you told the other young lady previously on the call when you said do a affidavit of default or whatever. I can't remember what you said exactly. But
yeah,
I've been –
yeah, an affidavit of default. That's exactly what you need to do.
And that's exactly, I mean, when you said that, it just popped in my head like, my God, that's what I needed right there, the affidavit.
You bypassed the whole process. As long as you have everything written down on your case, you have to. That's why it's very important to write a good wherefore clause, because the wherefore clause says everything, and it's what you're going to get if you win. And so if you win the case, then all you have to do is the wherefore clause is there, and everything's spelled out and laid out clearly for the clerk that they don't have to make any guesses or judgment calls, then they can go forward and give the give you the proper paperwork with your affidavit of default, you know, stamp it and seal it, and then you can go down to the sheriff for collection. Let him
right.
go.
Right. So
they ain't got the money, if they ain't got the money, tell the sheriff, I want their desks, I want their computers, I want their rugs, I want their pitch, anything that's in there worth any, I want that. Once the sheriff goes, and you need to push the sheriff to do that because most sheriffs may not do that. And there was a case out there where the guy was trying to get his money from a bank and they wouldn't give it to him. And he went down and got the sheriff. The sheriff didn't want to do it at first, but he was forced to do it. He had to obey the law. So he went to the bank and, you know, he said then started moving furnitures. And deputies coming in and starting taking things out. Well, the bank wrote the check pretty darn quick.
Right, because, you know, that's the Wisconsin, it's the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. They're over the whole child support operation. They're over the foster care operation, the child care operation, adoptions operations. So they have the money, but they don't have that $160,000 in the budget for me, because what they've been doing, every month they still close down another center. So what they do is rob Peter to pay Paul. They've been doing that since 2009. That's the reason why they shut us down. It wasn't because of fraud. It was because they didn't have the money, and that particular program ran in a deficit for 3 years in a row under the previous governor. And so they shut us down and made it look like it was fraud, and really changed paperwork and everything. They were very bold. They had the police running in our houses, taking all of our documentation, our computers. It was definitely a witch hunt, to say the least. I don't even think there's a word for what happened to us, to be quite honest, but I know that things like this got to be happening all over this whole country, but ours is documented. Yeah. Yeah, and ours is documented, and they have a problem with me because I don't sit down, I don't shut up, I don't let them tell me what, none of that, because if it was up to them, I would have never won my case, because they wouldn't give us any assistance. They cut all our money off. We, you know, they basically treated us as if we were guilty, and we had to prove our innocence. And I think that that's what's happening in America right now, where people are being just railroaded, and you're supposed to be treated innocent until you're proven guilty, but we know that that is not how this system is working.
Right.
So,
well, let me
I
ask
was supposed
you, have you considered being an administrator with us?
Oh, I didn't. It's not even considered. It's already done. I've been taking that. I've been on the site every night. I'm finishing. I'm finishing up that the first civics course. I should have that done sometime this week, so I can start the next one. No, I'm very much so interested in becoming an administrator. I am very serious about justice for people. I just started my own church, a free church. And the name of my church is the Church of Integrity and Divine Accountability, because I think that what we need is accountability on all fronts. And it doesn't matter, because a lot of times people are getting away with stuff and they're just not being held accountable. And I think if we as the people start holding people accountable, and I think that that's what you're doing, and that's why I'm all on board, because nobody wants to hold people accountable anymore, because either it's because they're getting paid not to, or they feel like they don't want to ruin their reputation if they do so. And we have to come out of that, because we're never going to live in a place that's going to be fair and law-abiding for us or our children if we just let people just do anything and never hold them accountable. So I'm totally on board. I'm in Milwaukee, so I'm going to be right there for Milwaukee County. And I'm very eager to get it done, but I do need just a little assistance with what I'm doing. I've been working on this for years, and I want to make these people pay.
Let me give you some thoughts. So first of all, and I want to say this for everyone, and I speak to myself first, and I speak to everyone else. We have to remember, whatever we do, especially as an administrator, that we act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. Not take anything personally. We have to be honest with ourselves and honest with our maker. And we need to remind each other of this from time to time. We need, you know, if we say it once and people agree, and then 3 years later they haven't even heard it said a second time, we got a problem. No, we have to live with this idea of bringing this idea to each other. You know, remember, we got to act with honor. We have to be just, and we have to consider mercy at the end of the day in everything you're doing. But as far as your case is concerned, I would suggest very strongly trying to, since you didn't have a good wherefore clause, it sounds like you didn't have a wherefore clause, a good one anyway, because you
now,
didn't.
Now, what is that, if you don't mind? What is the wherefore? I did have an attorney help me put together. I grabbed all of my contracts, because that's what they tried to get the police to steal from us, take all the contracts.
At the end of your case, when the papers were written, especially the first, they call it a complaint. Okay, and so you file a complaint and you list out all these things, and at the end of the complaint, it's got wherefore,
And then after that, it's called the wherefore clause. It's the last paragraph in the paper. And at that point, that's when you define exactly what you're expecting to get the court to do for you, that you want your damages paid, and you give them some kind of a formula to figure it out, or you give them a detailed number. I'm looking for X amount of dollars, or whatever the case may be. So what did the wherefore clause say?
Now, we grabbed all of my contracts and we put together an actual, it wasn't like an invoice, but we kind of put it together to show all of the outstanding contracts that were not fulfilled. And
you have some kind of a formula to figure out the
answer. I do. It's already up. I have the formula. I have all of that. And I turned that into the court, and he basically just ignored that and said I needed to go elsewhere. And that's why these people gave me a $10,000 check, like they were just going to sweep me under the rug. And so at first I wasn't going to ever cash that $10,000 check. Then I had somebody else say cash it, but make sure when you endorse it that there's still an outstanding amount due and that this does not settle the debt, this cashing of this check. So I made sure that I put that on the back.
Yeah, you got to be careful what they do say. Yeah, if you sign some paper, if you haven't signed any paper, there's no agreement. But yeah, you could just say partial payment or something like that. And that does kind of put it in a safe position. But nevertheless, you take your papers, especially your wherefore clause. You know, usually what you want to do is go to the judge and you write an order for the judge to sign. Okay. You know, lawyers, when one lawyer wins the case, they write the order for the judge, and you could do the same thing, and you look at your wherefore clause and you write it up and make it detailed, and then you go to the judge to give you his signature on that. Okay, once you have that, you can use that to take it to the sheriff, or you could take your wherefore clause if it's very clear and it doesn't require a lot of guessing or judgment.
It doesn't. It doesn't require any guessing. No guessing.
Oh, okay. Well, then just take it to the clerk and give them an affidavit of default. You're swearing that they defaulted and so on and so forth. And you want to take this to collection. So you do an affidavit of default, and you lay out what it is that you're looking to get off these people, to take, and you attach it with your papers. The clerk should stamp it as long as it's clear, and they see that the case has been ended, and you're doing an affidavit that they defaulted. There's no reason why they wouldn't go forward, and then you take it down to the sheriff and go collect.
Okay, so the clerk needs to stamp that, and then I can take it to the sheriff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Okay, and then, because I'm taking notes while we're talking, because I'm making sure, because I'm going to be on top of this, like, by the end of this week. So with the sheriff, I would just take them showing that this was sealed and stamped by the clerk. I'm using the county clerk or the clerk that's inside that judge's room. Which one?
Oh, no, you go to the county clerk.
Not the clerk for the judge. Okay.
State court, right? State or county court, right?
Yeah, it's actually state. Yeah. Yep, state or county. They're the same.
You're going to the elected individual. It's the county clerk was elected. Now, they'll have other counties clerks assisting them. They can do the job of the county clerk also. I don't think it's necessary for the clerk's the elected clerk's signature on it. But there'll be a reference to that in any event anyway, and any other clerk can sign it that's working underneath that clerk. But it's the county clerk you go to, and make sure you lay it out in your affidavit what you're expecting and attach the papers of the case with your wherefore clause originally on it. Attach that to that, and then look for it to get it stamped, that's been filed. And once it's filed, that's what it is. It's a filing of the affidavit of default. And once they're accepting that filing, that allows it to be then, because you're going to have a copy, an original copy. I'd get at least two original copies. I'd keep one and bring one to give to the sheriff. And then the sheriff will go out and get a job. They get 10%, but they don't take 10%. They'll take 10% off the top of everything they collect.
But you'll be they'll keep collecting and collecting and collecting until you get your full amount. So it'll be, they'll collect 110% at the end of the day. Okay?
Right.
You get 100% and they'll get 10% on top of that. The other side pays their fee for that, their 10% fee.
John?
So is it possible for them to just go to the state, to the state's bank, which is U.S. Bank? U.S. Bank holds the money for the state of Wisconsin.
No, they go to whoever it is that you were suing. But Brent's going to say something here, and maybe he can correct me or give you more information. Brent?
No, I just wanted to say when you're ready, if you're ready, I'm ready to talk. But whatever you've got on your mind with this, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to let you know.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Anyway, we spent a lot of time, so if you want to ask more, we can do more next week, and I'm glad you're going to get involved with us, and you sound like someone that really, you got a good grip on some things and how things work to some degree here. So.
Yeah, I do, and I want to thank you all because I'm just one last lady that I'm helping. It's the last thing that I want to just share really quickly. She was one of the daycare providers who went to jail, and we got proof that they switched all the documents in order for her to go to jail for 6 months here in Wisconsin. And so I know it's a way that we can open her case back up and show that these people actually fraudulently changed documentation to get her prison time. And so I'm working with her on her case as well right now. But I know that's going to take some more stuff to open up. But, yeah, I'm working on some stuff. I just started my own organization called Just Women USA. And so I'm doing a couple of things. But I will be in touch, and I'll be back on next week, Monday.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Shanquil, is that how you pronounce your name?
Yep, Shanquil. Thank you.
Shanquil. Okay, thank you. Okay, let me see. We've got like 13 minutes left, Brent, so we'll just continue with another call or two, and then if you make it in next week, pick it up then. Is that good?
Fine. That's fine. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you. And feel free to comment on anything here as we talk if you want. Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's take Jim from Pennsylvania. You got the mic. Jim from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jim in Pennsylvania. I'd rather hear Brent than hear me talk.
Well, it's just that it's so short. We got 12 minutes left, and we do have about five people in the queue left. I'd like to get whatever I can. But, yeah, I think Brent needs more than 12 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to try to be very...
Brent, you really got something that's on your mind that you want to share, and take the 12 minutes, we'll give it to you if you think you got something that
No, I don't. And I understand if there's people in the queue, they want to talk, and I want to hear what they've got. I want to hear what they've got to say.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I like it, too. Right. Go ahead.
Okay, Mike.
Go ahead, Jim.
My question, it's not... I haven't researched it, but I want to try to get an understanding or definition on a term, and I didn't research it. It was brought up tonight about us being forced to take a marriage license through the government, and so my term is, and I believe it's Artesian contract, where you enter into a contract, and the full disclosure is not released on that agreement.
There's no meeting of the mind, so it's null and void anyway. Yep.
Are you familiar with the term? Did I say that correctly? Did I pronounce it correctly? Artesian contract?
I'm not familiar with that term. Brent, are you familiar with that term? I don't know. Brent may be muted. Okay, maybe he stepped away.
There I am.
There you go. Are you familiar with that term? I never heard that term before.
Yeah, yes, but it's adhesion with a D as in delta, A-D, and it's an unhappy set of circumstances that it's called that because that's meaningless. But what it is supposed to signify is a contract that On one side, there's a powerful party who writes a complicated contract. On the other side is a fellow who doesn't have a clue what he's agreeing to. So what you said, John, is still stands true in that kind of a contract. There's no mutual understanding, no meeting of the minds. And that's the way some of these contracts are written. For example, credit card companies have all these large contracts in print so fine you can't read them, and you sign them. Nobody knows what they're agreeing to, and the courts will say that's ridiculous. Contracts need to be simple. Of course they do. Get the Latin and the Norman French words out of them, and whether or not a marriage license is an adhesion, a marriage license is a ticket. That's all it is, just a ticket, like going to the ball game. It's permission to go in, permission right. to get married. And the sad thing about all that is the Supreme Court has recognized this, and it's just a matter of fact, as a matter of the laws of nature and of nature's God, the right to get married is a fundamental right. The Supreme Court has recognized it under the 10th Amendment of our Constitution. It's protected, therefore, under our Constitution. You don't need permission to exercise a fundamental right. You don't need permission to speak freely. You don't need permission to freely associate. You don't need permission to choose who you're going to associate with at church. Freedom of religion. You don't need permission to assemble with people. Freedom of association, freedom of assembly. You don't need permission for that from the government. No, and don't ever let, it's even true, you don't need permission to carry a loaded firearm. Why? Because it's a fundamental right. What does that mean? That means a fundamental right's a right that is given direct from God right on to the individual, no intermediary between, no government, no church institution, no pope, no priesthood, no nothing, God and you, under the dome of heaven. He puts it on you because you are made in out of his holy imagination, his image, and you have responsibilities. That's what a right is, an old Anglo-Dane word that means responsibility, a duty to make a decision. And marriage is one of those fundamental rights because it's fundamental to God's fundamental trust settlement, his covenant with mankind to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Government doesn't have jurisdiction. The state, the powers that be, don't have jurisdiction to enter into that. But they do it. And the excuse that they gave when they started this a little over 100 years ago was, well, we want to prevent venereal disease, so you need to get a test to get married, and that means you've got to have permission, and if you've got VD, we're not going to let you get married. But you know what? Since marriage licenses have been in place for a little over 100 years, venereal disease has risen per capita. It hasn't gone down. This is madness. I read the statute of the state recently concerning marriage licenses because we had a case where a fellow was, they said he wasn't married, and they took his wife away from him and got a guardianship. And well, he was married. He went to a Presbyterian church. He went through a ceremony. They had the preacher there. They had witnesses there. They didn't get a marriage license. But you read the statute in that particular state, and it says, well, here's how you get a marriage license. When you get a marriage license, when you get married, you do this, this, this. No place does it say you got to get a marriage license. Why? Because they know, and I know, it's unlawful to require such thing. It would be struck down as unconstitutional immediately. What is marriage? Let's get down back to fundamentals. What constitutes a marriage? Go to the laws of nature's God, as our Declaration of 76 puts it. What's the laws of nature's God? That's the Lex Scripta, the Bible. And when William Blackstone makes this clear, you go to the Bible, do you find that you have to have any of those things to be married? Do you even find that you have to have a ceremony to be married? The answer is no. Are there ceremonies in the Bible? Was it part of the culture of different people at different times? Yes, but that's not the law of God. It's just something people do to express their commitment. We do that too. Nothing wrong with it. Matter of fact, I think there's everything right about it, that people have witnesses in. It becomes public, but marriage is much more than a ceremony. It's much more than a ring, a wedding ring. Of course, those are just the signs of a reality, a recognition of what God has done. Because the Bible says God puts men and women together. Men don't do that. What God has put together, says the old creed, let no man put asunder. Cranmer wrote that in the Common Book of Prayer. We've been saying it ever since. God's the one that does it. We, by ceremony, choose to recognize it. That's all. But the marriage license, the permission of the state to join together and fulfill the covenant of God to be fruitful, multiply, and conquer the land? No. Don't do that. Don't let people do that to you. Don't submit to that. This is fundamental. This is no small matter. This is the most fundamental agreement that our Maker has with us, and he wants us to agree with him about that. Back to you, John.
All right. Thank you, Brent. Okay, Jim, we're going to take one. We only got a couple of minutes left, 5 minutes, so I'm going to take the next caller. Maybe you don't have any other questions or comments, do you, Jim?
Quick comment. I just want to get this information out to the critical mass. That's all.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, we'll take at least one more caller. We'll see how long this one goes. Maybe we can take two. But it's North Carolina. What is it, Barrett?
Barrett from North Carolina, yes.
You got the mic.
Yeah, on that North Carolina caller with the divorce.
Yep.
What he needs to do is countersue the state for their half of the child support.
That's a good idea.
It's a three-party contract.
Well, again, it's asking permission. So, you know, I think Brent was making the point that it may not be a contract. Was that your point you were trying to make, Brent, other than the, you know, it's just really permission getting a license?
No, a license is not a contract. A license is permission.
Permission,
I can give people license to do this or license to do that. They may take advantage of my permission. They may not. Yes, you may walk on my lawn. No, you may not. That's not a contract. And a marriage license is not a contract. Yeah, that's my point. Let's at least get that part straight. And then, well, I don't need permission from the powers that be to exercise my fundamental duties before my Maker that he has given me to do.
Yeah,
to me. Yeah, go ahead.
That whole business being a license, really, so that they can make money, number one, marrying you, and then they make a lot more money when you get the divorce, you see? So that's what's behind all that.
Okay, I got a quick question for Brent, too.
Yeah.
In the legislative records, when they introduce a bill or legislation,
mm-hmm.
and the introduction in the bill is all lined through as if it's stricken from the record, and all the names that voted for it are lined through like it's stricken from the record, what does that mean?
That means they're trying to keep you from knowing what's going on. That's what it means. And they they do that. Nobody challenges it. It stands. Nobody challenges it. How do you challenge it? Try to challenge it. That's almost impossible, too. You won't get anywhere. That's like trying to ask a federal judge for a copy of his oath. You're beating your head against the wall. Does he owe you a copy of his oath? Yes. Will he, or them, or the people that are the keepers of that, give it to you? No, they won't. And they know that they have more power than you. What we're dealing with here is power. How do you overcome that kind of power? There's only one way to do it. The only remedy for lawlessness is true law. And if there is a critical mass, as one of you fellows said a while ago, it was a good point, a critical mass is not a majority. A critical mass, if, for example, in chemistry, is enough of whatever chemical you put into the mixture that chemically alters it, like leaven. Leaven chemically alters bread. Just a speck of it in that big container, that big pot of that dough, will chemically alter the whole thing. That's what we're looking for, and that's the way God works. When Noah went into the ark with eight persons went in, they were in the minority. When they came out, they were in the majority. That's the way God does things.
Right.
And he does not operate. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
The reason I was asking, there's legislation that, and the way I'm seeing is when it was lined through, is stricken from the record.
Uh-huh. I see. But you can read it, right?
Yes, you can read it, but it's lined through like it's stricken from the record. Does that mean it's stricken from the record?
Oh, yes, I see what you're saying, yes. And that happens a lot because in that case, I didn't understand what you were saying. In that case, they want you to know what had been there, but now that's been changed. That's what that says. And so you have to go find out then what they replaced it with or just what maybe they just eliminated it. See, that may be what they have done.
Well, here's what I was looking at.
The prevention for the appellate court to hear, no? Generally speaking, anyway.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Well, here's the record I'm looking at. It was 1789, September 17th, when they introduced the legislation for the Constitution to be sent to the states to be ratified.
Uh-huh.
It's all stricken through.
What do you mean it's all stricken through?
It's like they struck it from the record, like it never happened.
What did they strike from the record?
The introduction into Congress to vote on passing it down to the states for ratification.
You talk about 1789?
Yes, sir, September 17th.
Well, they agreed that was ratified, and they agreed to ratify it, providing that they would add additional part to it, which is the Bill of Rights.
But what I'm saying is that was stricken from the record.
Huh?
That was stricken from the record, and it was never replaced.
What was stricken from the record and never replaced?
The bill from Congress to send the Constitution to the states to be ratified.
No, it was ratified. There's a record of that. Are you trying to say that the Constitution was never ratified?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh no, definitely not.
Let me put it this way: they might have sent it to the states to be ratified, but they struck the resolution to send it to the states from the record.
Well, not that I'm aware of. No, not at all. Look, they came together and they agreed, and there was numerous states, three or four states, that refused to sign unless there was some more declaratory statements in there. And they wanted really a bill of prohibition. And so the agreement was, matter of fact, I think there are a few items in Article 1, Section 10, I think it is, that was added in there because of the and was agreed upon before the Constitution went through. And I'm not sure, and I'm not really clear on this, but I think that there is. For instance, I think the habeas corpus was one, and also the other one where holding a position of trust. I think those two particularly were put into the Constitution, agreed to, but they agreed later on, and it says so in the Declaration of Independence, or another declaration, the Bill of Rights. Let me just read this, the Bill of Rights. It says here, the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adoption the Constitution expressed the desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the grounds of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. And then it's resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, so on and so forth. And then, of course, you have the Bill of Rights, the Ten Amendments. And that was the only thing. There are people trying to make an argument, and I've heard this, and I've challenged them many times, and no one's ever come back with anything because they can't. But they say that there's two constitutions out there. There's the 1787 Constitution, and there's the 1789 Constitution. Let me think about this. I think it was the 1787 Constitution and the 1789 Constitution, and they said that it's the 1789 that's the real one. But there's no two constitutions. It was just one. The only difference that was added between 1787 and 1789 was an agreement at the convention that when they adopted this, that they would add certain further declaratory restrictive clauses. And I believe there was 13 of them. And so the 13 just needed to be negotiated out and worded properly. And all 13 was taken in, by the way, because they just broke it down and put it into 10.
Connecticut refused to ratify the Constitution.
No, I think all states finished off ratifying. After they made the declaratory agreement, all states, I'll have to go look. I know it was unanimous because it said so in the Constitution. So it has to have been unanimous.
It was unanimous to all those present, but
Connecticut might have refused to sign. There was numerous states that refused to sign. Let me reread this. At the convention, a number of the states having the time of the adoption of the Constitution expressed the desire to add more. And so they refused to sign. There was quite a few states. I forget the number, maybe four. And then so they agreed to add the other declaratory statements at a later time. And they did so in 1791.
Now, I might have my history wrong, but when the Constitutional Convention convened, those that didn't, that refused to ratify the Constitution were locked in the basement so they could be counted as present and never got to place their vote.
No, I don't know. I don't know where you get. Look, I've never heard anything like this. It doesn't fit the bill of these people back in those days and who they were. Yeah, they fought in this, but they also prayed together, and they prayed more than they fought, I've heard, you know. So, you know, they really worked hard to give us a proper constitution, and boy, did they give us, they delivered, let me tell you. This is a great constitution. It's not perfect. There's a couple of flaws in it, but those flaws actually are fixed by the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights will repair any problem or anything that is repugnant to the Constitution. That repairing will be done by the Bill of Rights. As a matter of fact, look at, when you read the Constitution, you need to read it in light of the Bill of Rights. Anything that is repugnant to the Bill of Rights is null and void in there. But, you know, the slavery thing is one of the problems. It was repugnant to the Declaration of Independence. It was repugnant to the Bill of Rights. Okay. So that's something, and it doesn't exist no more. We don't have a problem with those that particular clause. I think it's called the two-thirds clause in the Constitution. So that was a problem in the Constitution. There might have been one or two others. I just can't think of them. But nothing that affects us today, number one, and nothing that has that can't be repaired and appreciated through the Bill of Rights. But yeah, the things you're saying, I've never even heard of this stuff before, and I've done a lot of research in this. Because we need to have a proper understanding of the Constitution. And I'm still researching, by the way.
Because if there was one state that didn't ratify the Constitution, it's totally null and void. Because if you go back to Article 13 in the Articles of Confederation, any changes or replacements had to be unanimously approved.
Well, the Constitution was unanimous to begin with. And I would agree that the Constitution would have to be unanimous. But after that, it doesn't have to be unanimous. You know, it's two-thirds, I believe.
I don't think this was tested on fields of battle. A lot of people died. Hundreds of thousands of people died during the war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states. And the southern states said clearly that we want the northern states to follow the Constitution. That was their cry. And I am not aware that they ever said that it wasn't ratified. But they supported it. They supported the Constitution. They wanted the northern states to follow it, and they didn't believe they were. And that came down to the states seceding, too. So I never heard it either, but I'll leave 5% that I'm wrong and say I'm 95% sure that that's not the case. But even if it were the case...
Well, I'll go one step over that. I'll go 99% I'm sure.
Okay.
I'll leave my 1%, well, yeah, and that's too much for
even,
me.
Yeah, even if it were the case, it wouldn't change the fact of the matter that we've accepted the Constitution for over two centuries, and that common law, that's acceptance. And that's not going to be overturned, and it's not going to be changed, not by law. There's principles like that in our law, too. Even if a person becomes elected president of the United States, and it's clear, as I believe it has been, the last couple of election, or the last election, I should say, when the fellow was in the White House that was not a natural-born citizen. He was there for 8 years. The doctrine of our common law says he's still, we have to, I'll save that for next time. It's a tough, but it's a reality of our common law. It's the way we keep peace. It's irritating to the extreme. I want to talk about natural-born citizens, but I'm glad you bring these things up. I don't tell people don't bring that up. If you've heard something and you believe it's true, well, maybe it's worth at least knowing about. History is history. You can't change it. The facts are important. If that really happened, we should know it. But I've not read or where that has happened. Back to you, John.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, we're going to bring us to an end. Okay, Barrett, we're like 9 minutes over, so we're going to end it for the evening. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And again, everybody keep focused and keep learning and keep studying, and let's do what we got to do to save this nation, because only we can do it. Only the people can save this republic, and we can do it. It just takes desire and taking that one step forward. Okay, good night. Thank you for coming.